Hello there. I mean, greetings. I'm Lord Bruticus the Brutal One, and you're listening to the Wampa's Lair podcast. And you're not listening to Dark Empire Radio. I'm going to have to fix that here. You're listening to Dark Empire Radio. Just kidding. Oh, that was a good one. Yay me.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClair and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another wonderful edition of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 17, and today, along with myself, Jason Hunt, we have our maker for the Wampa's Lair podcast, Carl LeClair. How you doing, Carl?
Good, Jason. How you doing, buddy? Just coming back from your 23rd year of birth.
Yes, I am. Whopping 23 years. However, yesterday, as of this recording, was not just my birthday. It was also the birthday of our other guest that we have on today. We have Chris Hawthise Planet Smith from the Sarlacc Pit. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good. I'm glad that y'all invited me. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, and tomorrow, I mean, yesterday was such a big day, the birthday of the creator of Star Wars, the creator of the Sarlacc Pit, who inevitably is the co-creator to some degree of the Wampa's Lair, because without Chris's inspiration, this would have never happened. So what a great day to celebrate.
Yes, it is.
So we have a great show lined up tonight, because whenever Chris is here, it's a good time.
Exactly.
And, we had him on here.
Make him nervous.
You're nervous?
No, I said I'm making y'all nervous.
Yeah, just a little bit, you know, shaking, you know.
He's like he's the grandfather of the Wampa's Lair. And
go there.
But anyway, we got a great show lined up. We're going to be ranking the films tonight, how we think the films line up to us. We got a couple of responses tonight on the computer as well. But before we get into any of that, before we get into our lightsaber matchup, we're really happy to have Chris in here, because Chris has started his own new Kickstart project, and Chris is working on his own trivia book. It's called Trivia from a Galaxy Far, Far Away, Star Wars, the original Star Wars edition. Did I get that right, Chris?
The original trilogy.
Original trilogy, that's right, my bad. So, Chris, where did you come up with this idea? Where did this all come from?
Well, basically, this kind of came just from me being frustrated with other trivia books or the Star Wars Trivial Pursuit games. And for me, I love the movie so much. It just seems like a no-brainer to have a trivia book that's focused only on movies. All of these other books and the Trivial Pursuit, they always have these behind-the-scenes questions that are really tough. They have a lot of the EU questions, expanded universe questions that are really tough. And I understand they want to make the book tough for the geeks like us, for the really diehard fans. But that kind of, when you sit down and play with your friends, say like me, if us three sat down and played those, we would have pretty even. We'd be even. We could still play the game. But if you brought in, say, a nephew that's only seen a couple of the movies, maybe, or maybe he's seen all the movies. If he's not diehard, then he's not gonna have any fun, because we're just gonna basically dominate. So for me, in playing with my nephew and my sister over the years, I kind of had it in the back of my mind that I wanted to do my own book. But it, you know, it just took several years. It finally was like, well, why don't I just do that and do it? So over the last couple of years, I've worked hard and really buckled down this year and got it done. And now I'm in the pre-production process as we speak.
That's awesome. Now, Chris, can you explain kind of what the Kickstart project is? I mean, I never knew what it was until you proposed this idea, but what exactly does the Kickstart project entail?
Well, Kickstarter is a website that people can go and submit a project, say, like myself, submit a project to be funded, to where the community as a whole, not just the Star Wars community, but just people in general, they can donate money to your fund. But the one thing is, with Kickstarter, you can't just do anything. It has to be a specific project, say, like a book, or if you're doing a music album, or you're making a movie, stuff like that. You can't go and fund, oh, I want to pay my rent for the next 2 months and throw a project. That's not going to work because they're not going to allow it. But I've been involved with Kickstarter for a while. The Save the Lars Homestead guys, they ran their Kickstarter last year, and I contributed to that. And a friend of mine here in Memphis, Adam, he just recently released a book, the Star Wars Filming Locations of the United States, and he ran a Kickstarter project, and we had him on, talked about it, and we helped him out with it and got, you know, helped spread the word and everything. So I've kind of had my little share of Kickstarter, just a little bit. And to me, anytime I donated to these other projects, I always felt like that I was actually a part of getting that project done, not just me giving my money to them just to support. I just truly felt like that if I didn't, then they wouldn't have been able to accomplish what they were doing. If not everybody on there doesn't fund the project, then I just always felt like, and I'm kind of rambling, so I'm going to kind of have to start this over again.
Okay.
My goodness, I hate that when your brain just like stops. Let's see. Anytime I funded a project, I always completely and truly felt like that I was helping them to fund their project, not just because I gave them the money, but because I just felt like I was a part of it, like as if I was actually there physically helping them make the movie or make the album, you know, that sort of thing. So, and the one key thing with Kickstarter is, in my project, it ends on May 31st. I got 15 days left. And today is, like you had mentioned, is Tuesday, May 15th, and it got till May 31st. And until we hit our goal, if say, Carl, you go over there and you submit your pledge to it, well, your credit card's not going to be charged until May 31st when it ends, and we have hit our $6,000 goal. So if we don't hit our goal by that day, nobody gets charged. And basically, what that means is I'd have to do it again. I'd have to go back and rewrite it, or you know, make some tweaks to it and rerun it. If that's the case,
yeah. No,
so I don't think that's going to happen. So,
you think that's going to happen?
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Good.
We're just going to finish right up and then move right on with the next step.
So, can I ask you where you're at right now? Then do you know the numbers
as far as money wise?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, we're just getting started. In it, we're just went over $600.
Okay.
So we're sitting at 10%. But like I said, you guys had joined us on our last episode, and that was just posted up. So I'm hoping here in the next couple of days that once this show gets out and then your show gets out, things are going to really start to pick up. And from what I have dealt with Kickstarter before on the other projects, they really pick up steam as the day gets closer. Because, you know, this is so many people in the world nowadays that they just wait to the last minute for everything. It's just kind of the way the world is, that everything's so instant nowadays that they're just like, oh, okay, well, it doesn't, you know, it ends on the 31st, so hey, I got till then. So,
yeah, which I hear that.
Which is fine with me. It's just, you know, it's just anxious, and I'm just really, really anxious to get it out there, and
right,
everybody else excited as much as I'm excited about this project.
Yeah.
No, And when you reach the goal, the $6,000 goal, what is that money used for?
Well, after the rewards, because we'll get into that in a few minutes about the rewards, once I take care of getting all the rewards taken care of, shipped out to everybody, everything that's left over obviously will go to the book. It goes to, like I'd mentioned before, I'm already in the pre-production process of the book. And it's a very long process. Anybody that's never dealt with a book like myself until just now, I was overwhelmed at how many steps and what all it takes to go into just to get a book to publication. So it takes a while. There's a lot of steps to go through. And right now I'm still working on the cover art, the front cover design, and the interior formatting of the book. So I still got a long ways to go, but all of the money strictly goes to the funding of the publication, getting the book finished, getting the book through publication out into stores, and also promotion of the book. And that's actually included in with everything. It's not like a separate thing that you pay. It's included with everything else. So
sounds good.
Yeah. So I mean, pretty much the benefit of Kickstart then is it kind of lets everyone participate, like you were saying, Chris. The people that contribute the money, and I know, again, one of your rewards, which I'll let you explain in a second, but I know one of the rewards is obviously getting your name in the book. But, you know, like we say, you know, it allows those who donate the money, it's not simply like they're just giving you money to do all the work, but in a sense, like, everybody's participating in this book. I mean, you've got the crux of the work to do, but at the same time, you can't do it without the support of the community.
Exactly, and in this case, it's 100% true. I know I've seen some projects recently that I actually helped to fund, and it was interesting. You know, this particular person puts their project up, and they've already got it set, and it's already in production, and the book, this particular thing with the DVD, is coming out regardless if the Kickstarter, and they say that right up front, which is great, but their sole benefit of doing the Kickstarter is to let people be involved, let them get a cool reward, because that's one of the things with Kickstarter. I guess we'll go ahead and go into the rewards right now. Whereas everybody that donates to a particular project, they get something back for what they're given. They're not just giving away their money. They're not just donating it to a charity, so to speak. They're actually getting some type of a reward in return. And I've set up to where I have, obviously, you get a signed copy of the book. I have 2 Sarlacc Pit Podcast T-shirts for people to choose from, or both. And we also have going to have an art print of the cover art done by Joe Hogan, which he also did the logo T-shirt artwork as well. And then, of course, basically the minimum of it is at the $15 level. If you just want to come over and contribute $15. And that's it. You get your name printed in the book under a specific section called Superfans, which is really cool because I'm just like, hey, you donate $15 and you get your name in a book? Come on. So, you know, that's a cool idea. But I just recently added in a higher. All my levels go from like 15, 20, 28, and I'm not looking at them, so I'm going from memory, and then like 40, 45, 50, 55, 60. It's like that. They're broken down. So you have plenty of levels to choose from, all the way up to $100, where you get everything for $100. You get a copy of the book, you get both T-shirts, you get the cover art, and you get your name in the book. And then I added a $250 level, which you get that same thing, plus you get your name listed in the credits of the book as a executive producer of the publication team. And that's kind of what I've called it. You're not just donating your money to the book. You're actually joining the publication team, because without everybody's help, plain and simple, this just cannot be done. And number one, this is not a sanctioned, approved book by Lucasfilm. This is completely independently done. It's not approved. It's not sanctioned. It's not done through Lucasfilm at all, 100%. It's all mine. All my brain putting this down on paper. So I don't know, that kind of sounds like a scary thought there, but anyway, I started the pre-production with my own funds. I kicked it all off. I've already put over $1,500 into it myself, and more to come. And I wanted to get it out there. For number one, I really do need the help from people, but I don't want it to sound like, hey, I'm desperate, I need your help. I also want to give the people a chance out there, other fans such as yourself, and say, you know, our buddy Jesse that we had on just recently. I want to give everybody a chance to be involved and feel like they own part of this book, which to me they do, because without everybody else's help, it's simply, this book cannot be done right now. It may take, you know, longer. So And without the fans, plain and simple, this book wouldn't be needed in the first place.
So, if it's for us, might as well have us participate in it. That's what it sounds like to me.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I've enjoyed working with the other projects that I've been involved with on Kickstarter, just, you know, donating money and actually getting a cool reward out of it in the process. And this is just another way for me to give somebody out there a chance to be involved and get their name in a book and also get a cool prize. I mean, what's can't get much cooler than getting a Sarlacc Pit podcast t-shirt, right?
I agree. That's that's why I'll be giving my donation soon. But I'll probably be like a lot of those other people who kind of wait to the last minute, you know, like when you're at church and you turn around and all of a sudden the church is full when it's like just as the service begins, you know. So but yeah. So I mean, I know that obviously over at the Sarlacc Pit, you guys are a really popular podcast now. And I mean, I know your Facebook page has well over 1,000 likes. We've only got 58, which is sad. We're working on getting more. But even if I know that for a fact that we have well more than 58 people listening to our show, you know, if everybody from our show could even just hop over there, donate $10 each, and everybody on the Sarlacc Pit could just donate $6 each. I mean, I did the math. Chris will be more than set to get this book out, which, you know, again, we all have the opportunity to participate in. So that leaves me my last question for now, Chris, and obviously I'd ask you to, you know, shoot this out again towards the end of the episode, but what is the website? Do you have it off the top of your head right there? What's the website for the Kickstarter project so people can hop over there and put some money down for this?
The easiest way to find it is, there's two ways, actually. You can go to facebook.com/trivia from a galaxy far, far away, and that'll pull up our Facebook page, and there's going to be links all over the place. Or you can simply just go to Kickstarter, and it's kickstarter.com, and then in the search box, just search Trivia from a Galaxy Far, Far Away, and then bam, it'll pop it right up. And it's anybody that hasn't dealt with Kickstarter, for you to donate money, it goes through Amazon. So if you have an Amazon account, you're set. Just a couple of clicks, and you're done. If you don't have an Amazon account, you can jump right over and set up one that doesn't take any time at all. I think if you want to, like, set up a, say, your checking account to it or something, that's going to take you a few days. If anybody has ever had to deal with setting up their bank account, it's not an instant thing. So just keep that part in mind. But if you already have an Amazon account, it's easy. Nothing to it. The Amazon takes care of all the payment issues with Kickstarter. So if you've dealt with Amazon, you're set and ready to go.
That's awesome. So basically, if you want a Star Wars trivia book by a fan for the fans, you need to participate in this Kickstarter project for our boy Chris Smith. So get on that, people.
Yes. And one last nerdy question, Chris. How many questions are in this book?
Oh, yeah. Forgot to mention that. Well, this book has 1,138 questions. You know, back when I was sitting here working on this book, I had texted Matt, my podcast partner, and I was asking, how many questions do you think would be a good amount? I was like, 500, 1,000, 15. And once I said 15 in my brain, I was like, oh, 1138. It's got to be that. It's either 1138 or I'd have to go the distance and do 2187. That would have really been kind of tough coming up with that many more questions. But one other quick thing. I had mentioned earlier that this book does not have any of the really tough behind-the-scenes questions or expanded universe questions. This book is strictly from the movies. There might be a couple of them in there that you can't answer straight just from watching a movie, but as many times as we've seen these movies, if you're one of those, you'll be able to get these answers from these questions. But this particular book, as I've wanted to focus this towards the third generation of Star Wars fans, because you know, I'm a part of the first generation, and I know you guys are a part of the second generation. And now with the Clone Wars, we're into our third generation. And a lot of these kids that are into the Clone Wars just haven't seen the movies yet. Or they might have seen them once, and they don't really know a whole lot about it. But if they sit down, say, with one of their parents and play with this book, and I mean that as play it like a game, because that's what we do with it. You don't just sit down and read a trivia book unless you're by yourself and you're quizzing yourself. But it's, to me, I feel like this is a really good way to get the kids intrigued into wanting to watch the movies more and pay more attention to what's going on in the movies. They'll learn to focus on details in the movie and trying to look for these answers to these questions. So, and I think that's going to be a big hit. And we were talking about, where is this book going to be available? One reason why I'm asking One reason why my goal is $6,000 is because I don't want this book just to be online. I want to spend the money to do this book right. I want this book available in Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart. Any bookstore that carries a book, they will be able to order this book. Any online retailer that wants to carry this book will be able to carry this book. Amazon, even Barnes & Noble online, anything like that. So this book will be available pretty much anywhere and everywhere that anybody wants to, any store that wants to carry it, they will have the opportunity to carry it. So I want to make it as widespread as possible, since it's designed specific for the younger generation to get involved.
Awesome. That's awesome. Simply awesome.
Awesome indeed.
I can't wait till this project gets finished and we get to see the final results of Trivia from a Galaxy Far, Far Away.
Me neither. I can't wait to see the final finished product myself. I'm so excited. I've been working on this for so long. It's just like, oh my gosh, I don't want to stop with trivia questions, but down to the final steps, man. I'm almost there. I'm just steadily working hard at it.
Well, great. Well, like we've said, you know, those of you who listen to our show, those of you who listen to the Sarlacc Pit, heck, any Star Wars podcast, you know, we're at the Star Wars Report. So if you're a Star Wars Report listener, a Star Wars Beyond the Films listener, whatever the heck you listen to, if you are a Star Wars fan and you want a trivia book by a Star Wars fan, Chris is your man. Hey, that rhymed. So go ahead and donate. We'd appreciate it. Chris would appreciate it. And I think George Lucas would probably even appreciate it, even if he hasn't sanctioned it. I'm just saying. I'm making a stretch there.
Yeah, maybe they'll want the next book of the series.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
After this one's a Pulitzer, so. So anyway, well, Chris, thanks for explaining all this to us and to our listeners, and you know, it'll hopefully this continues to go well for you. But without any further ado, as always, we like to start our show with our lightsaber matchup, and last week's lightsaber matchup was we pitted Mother Talzin versus Darth Sidious, or Emperor Palpatine, however you want to refer to him as, in light of our last episode last week with Lord Bruticus. And we got quite a few interesting responses. So, Jason, I'm going to let you take the floor and go ahead and read those responses for us.
Alrighty. As we said, this is between Palpatine and Mother Talzin. Over on Facebook, Jesse Ariano, who was on the Sarlacc Pit last episode, this is a tough one. Palps is strong in the Force, and Mother Talzin is super powerful in magic, so it's very hard to decide. I would call it a draw, just because I never see Mother Talzin use a saber, but she has some wicked magic. So it all ends in a draw for me. Brian V. Klein, a regular contributor to this segment, says it really depends on where the fight takes place, because it has pretty much been established that Mother Talzin can't use her magic if she isn't physically on Dathomir. This is according to Filoni. So if it takes place anywhere other than there, it is absolutely no contest. But I would give this fight to Palps anyway. The only people I can see Sidious ever losing to are Grandmaster Luke and Lord Vitate, I believe. That's how that's pronounced. The original Sith Emperor. Sidious is just too powerful, and he wouldn't be fooled by any of Talzin's hoodoo. Jazz from Norway says, agreed. Mother Talzin doesn't use any force from my understanding, only magic, though how tied to the force this magic is still open to debate. That being said, I don't think any of her ancient magic would be a match for a master of the dark side such as Emperor Palpatine. He'd fry her to a crisp. Enough said. Over on Twitter, Chris's co-host, the Crankster, says, gotta go with Palps. Force abilities over magics. And then we had a reply from Illogical Rogue 2, that is Mark Herleman from the Star Wars Report, for those of you that don't know. He says, Talzin, there is a reason Palpatine declared the planet Dathomir off-limits. If he could defeat her, there would be no need. And then we also got another great audio response from Lord Bruticus, and so we are going to go ahead and play that now.
Greetings. The brutal one here once again. Palpy versus Mama Talzin. Or, if watching senior citizens fight each other weren't enough when Palpy fought Yoda, here we go again. This time with elderly, mixed-gender fighting. Here is how I see it. We all know what Palpy can do, so I won't bother describing the abilities of the most powerful Sith genius to grace the big screen. His opponent, however, Mother Talzin, though relegated to the small screen, is still therefore a powerhouse canon character that Papa Palps had better watch out for. Face it, she almost killed Dooku in the Clone Wars series. Talzin, the head witch doctress of Dathomir, incorporates dark side magic, or dare I say Sith sorcery, into just about all that she does. Now, she has the ability to grant new bionic body parts at the waving of the hands at utterance of a few spells to people like Darth Maul, and she does have that voodoo thing that she does that she almost killed Dooku with, and maybe she might even have the ability to conjure up an army of dead Night Sisters, but I think the Palpinator might be a bit too smart for the Dathomirian mother. In order for her to perform all of these powerful wonders that she is capable of, it takes Mother Talzin time. She has to cast spells before any of her abilities are able to be at all. So, while I think Mother Talzin would be a credible threat to Lord Sidious from a distance, like she was to Dooku, she just wouldn't stand a chance when facing Palpy in close combat. Then again, she does have the ability to suddenly disappear into thin air, and that just might save her dark side here. Because of that ability, which she demonstrated while nearly getting offed by General Grievous, I give this matchup a draw. Sorry, Palpy. Better to brush up on your Sith sorcery so you can counter that little move of hers. Until next time, the Brutal One, out.
As much of a fan as Palpatine as we saw last week, or last episode, but a little shocking there.
Right. So, what is our numbers at then? What is it? All Palpatine and a couple of draws?
Yes, that puts us at... Oh, actually, we have 1, 2, 3 Palpatine, 1 for Talzin, and 2 draws.
Okay.
So, this is a nice little spread here so far. Chris,
yes.
What is your take on this matchup here?
Well, I don't think it would be a draw at all. Actually, Mark brought up a good point mentioning that about there's a reason why Palpatine didn't go to Dathomir or wasn't on there or whatever. But it to me, I look at it, if it's back in the Clone War era, real early in it, where he's still kind of the senator and everything, and he's still moving up in his power, I kind of think Talzin would probably take him. But if it's later in the original trilogy era, I think it would be literally no contest. I think he'd be so evil and dark that he would... I mean, let's face it, Palpatine's dirty. You know, he plays dirty, which we've seen Mother Talzin play dirty in the Clone Wars. But I just... If it was just one-on-one, I just don't think Mother Talzin would have enough for him.
All right. Okay. All right, so we got another one for Mother Talzin.
No, for Palpatine.
Oh, duh. Wow. Wow. Pay attention, Carl. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and give my take then. I'm going to have to also say it would definitely be Darth Sidious. The one thing I think Mother Talzin has, the Clone Wars episode where she essentially sets that spell onto Count Dooku. I think that really shows the extent of her power. Now, I think it was Brian that wrote in and said, you know, her power is limited to being on Dathomir. And I actually didn't know that. I didn't realize her power was restricted there. So obviously, yes, no contest anywhere else. She is all sorts of dead. But even on Dathomir, I mean, I think in that episode of the Clone Wars, when she cast that spell on Dooku, it shows that the amount of power she definitely has at her whims. But I don't know, there's just something about Sidious. Like Chris was just saying, you know, he's dirty, he fights dirty, he's not going to be fair. And I don't know, I feel like even though, you know, yes, he's a dark side user, I feel like he's the type, though, who would have dabbled in some of that magic and some of that witchcraft. And I think nothing would really surprise him. So yeah, I mean, obviously, this wouldn't be a lightsaber matchup per se. She doesn't use a lightsaber. But when it even came to powers of the Force or powers of the supernatural, I think you know, Sidious knows even more than might have been even revealed in the films. So I personally think he would win no contest. But what do you say, Jason?
Oh, I've hemmed and hawed and been back and forth all over this duel for ever since we introduced it. I've gone back and forth many times. And it's... I think... at this point, because I've just been back and forth over it so many times, I'm going to have to call it a draw. Palpatine is incredibly powerful as a Sith, obviously. We see that. He eliminated the Jedi Order without barely lifting a finger. But on Dathomir, Mother Talzin, if she's on there, she can transport her essence to other planets, as we saw in that Clone Wars episode. I mean, Dooku's all the way on his home planet of Sereno. We don't know how far away from Dathomir that is. But she is incredibly powerful in her stuff, too. But so it's one of those back and forths. If Palpatine were to travel to Dathomir, I would have to give it to Mother Talzin. But since he doesn't, I would just have to call it a stalemate, a draw. There's just too much unknowns as far as that whole... the supernatural, the force, all that stuff, back and forth. I can't pick a winner.
You don't have to, Jason. That's the joys of being a co-host.
Yes, yes. But that puts us at 5 for Palpatine, 3 draws, and 1 for Mother Talzin. And Chris... You wanted to make one more comment on this?
Yeah, Carl, you mentioned that earlier episode in Clone Wars where she put that spell on Dooku. And, I think she needed that other sorceress, the queen sorceress that was there, to be able to do what she did. It's been a while since I've seen that episode, so I have to go back and watch it again. But if I'm not mistaken, she had a hand in whatever was going on. She needed her help in order to get... to that distance.
So, oh, okay. I haven't watched that. I haven't seen it in a while either, but yeah, that's a good point.
Well, the old Night Sister was the one that was bringing back the Army of the Dead.
Right.
She was the one that was bringing them back and supporting them and ordering them around. But as far as the Mother Talzin's workings on Dooku, that was all her and her cauldron and her little voodoo dolls. So as far as I'm aware.
I think it was all somewhat connected because, I mean, I just remember when the old woman was killed, I know that all the troops fell, but I think it also had something to do with the other. But, you know, who knows? But it's sorcery is different from the Force. So hopefully we will see more of Mother Talzin coming up and we get to delve more into it. So,
yeah, I'm pretty sure she's not gone from the Clone Wars yet. So she still has a hand to play. So,
no, I have a feeling that she got killed between seasons 4 and 5. We just don't see it. I'm just kidding. Well, awesome, great. Thanks again to everybody who wrote in and participated in this. You know, the more people we have, the more fun we can have with it. So again, we encourage you to keep writing in. You know, whether it's on Facebook or via the emails, whatever it takes, just make sure you let us know what you think with these lightsaber duels. Now, we have another non-Force matchup for next week, but it's kind of a surprise fun one that Jason and I have come up with. And if you want to know what that is, you're going to have to stay tuned until the end of the episode.
So what is it, Kidster versus Jar Jar or something?
Chris, would you be quiet? Stop using the Force to read my mind.
When we say a nice little fun one, we mean nice fun as in cool and awesome. So,
yeah. So Jar Jar.
Right, right. Right. Dude, you forgot I work with Jason. So we have a fun show topic tonight. We're gonna go ahead and the three of us are going to rank our films and how we think they match up to us. I did throw up a Facebook message about this probably jeepers 2 hours ago, and luckily quite a few people wrote in really quick to give us their rankings.
Jason, did you want to just take like a minute and a half there to read through what people wrote into us?
Sure. I've got it all up right here. Twitter, we got one response. My Star Wars film, this is at Katibendu, I believe is how that's pronounced. He says, my Star Wars film ranking, least favorite to most favorite, is 2, 1, 3, 6, 5, and 4. On Facebook, we have a response from Des Pirado. Very funny. Nice little name there. Ha ha. From best to worst, best for me is Empire and worst is Menace. Brian V. Klein, number one, Empire Strikes Back. Number two, A New Hope. Number three, Revenge of the Sith. Four, Return of the Jedi. Five, The Phantom Menace. And six, Attack of the Clones. Jazz wrote in again, and he says, this is so hard. People must ask me this all the time, and I never have a good answer. He says, I truly see the movies as a saga, and they are all necessary for the storyline. That being said, I grew up with the OT, so they will always have a special place in my heart. But the PT are tremendous as well. And I find that whenever I pop a movie in, it always seems to be Attack of the Clones. Arg, this is so hard, so I will cop out and say all of them. Personally, I like Jazz's answer a lot. So, Susie Sherman says, in reverse episodic order, Return of the Jedi the best, Phantom Menace the least best. Jesse Ariano says, number one, Empire. Number two, A New Hope. Number three, Return of the Jedi. Four, Revenge of the Sith. Five, Attack of the Clones. And six, The Phantom Menace. Matt Krenke wrote in again as well. It says, and this is a shock to me. Number one, Empire Strikes Back. I'm so shocked, Matt. number two, Return of the Jedi. Three, A New Hope. Four, Revenge of the Sith. Five, Phantom Menace. And six, Attack of the Clones. And the last response we have, Kyle Avery. He says, one, Empire. Two, Return of the Jedi. Three, A New Hope. Four, Revenge of the Sith. Five, Phantom Menace. And six, Attack of the Clones. That's how I'd rank them at the moment. Depending on how I'm feeling, three and four sometimes switch, as do five and six. So.
Nice. Yeah. Well, good. Now it's our turn. I'm excited.
Yes.
Before I start, I mean, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way, except for my ranked first one, some of these other ones can fluctuate on occasion. And actually, in between the time when I wrote this, I literally wrote this list up on Saturday morning and kind of wrote down my comments. And then Sunday night, I watched episode 2 again because it had been so long. And then last night, I watched episode 3 again. Forgot how much I loved both of them. So things got changed up a little bit. So, again, to me, they somewhat fluctuate. But I think this is my hard and fast for right now. So, I'm going to go ahead and start it, if that's cool with you guys.
Yes, and we want to do this in reverse order, six being
of
going
course,
first.
Of course, yes.
Yes,
of course, you always start with your least favorite. Now, again, let me preface, too, by saying, you know, none of these movies are bad. It's Star Wars. We love them all, but, of course, we've got favorites. And I like what, I think it was Jazz who said it, you know, whatever he continually puts in. And, you know, my number one is definitely the one I watch the most. You know, when I sit down to watch Star Wars, this is the one I always inevitably go to. But that'll be saved for later on. So my number six is The Phantom Menace. And actually that was changed in the last 48 hours. But The Phantom Menace to me is my least favorite. And Jason, I know I love you. I know you love Mr. Banks. But he's what ruins The Phantom Menace for me. you know, and I'm totally fine with the fans of Jar Jar Binks. You know, I have no problems with that. But for me, he ruins the film. You know, Jason, in the few episodes we've recorded where he's come up, I've really appreciated what you've had to say. It's given me actually quite appreciation for who he is as a character. I just can't get behind him. He really just hurts the film for me a lot. The jokes are too juvenile for me. He's a little too, I don't know, goofy for me. I'm just not crazy about him. He really hurts the film to me. And also the Gungans, not crazy about the Gungans. Don't hate them, but certainly, you know, I don't go nuts for them. They're a little too cartoony for my liking. But, you know, that's really it for my negative side of The Phantom Menace. So, to me, though, I mean, what's great about The Phantom Menace is, hello, his name's Qui-Gon Jinn.
You know, I absolutely love Qui-Gon Jinn. Liam Neeson nails that role. I have a statue of a gentle giant statue of Qui-Gon Jinn in my apartment, and my roommate always calls it my Liam Neeson statue because he loves Liam Neeson. And I was like, no, it's Qui-Gon Jinn. He's like, oh, you mean Liam Neeson? I'm like, would you shut up already? But, you know, he's just an awesome character. He's that rogue Jedi we all love. You know, we get the pod race in The Phantom Menace, which is awesome. You know, we finally get to see what the Jedi Council is. And let's be honest, the greatest thing to ever come out of The Phantom Menace, the duel of the fates. I mean, the song itself, but Darth Maul, Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi going at it for, you know, 10 minutes there at the end of the film. No doubt in my mind, that is my favorite duel. I mean, just awesome. The Phantom Menace does a great job with that action sequence. But like I said, some of those other things just really take away from the film. You know, those first 5 minutes, 10 minutes of the film is awesome. And then you meet Jar Jar Binks, and I'm just like, oh, God, what are you doing here? So that's my number six. And, you know, pretty much what I did is I listed what I loved and didn't like about the film. So that's my number six. But what about you, Chris? What'd you say?
My number six is The Phantom Menace. And the reason, well, I'll give more of a reason why it's number six when I get to number five, but I guess, yeah, as you get older, to me, I have to be in a mood for Jar Jar. Sometimes he's just fine. Sometimes he does get on my nerve. But there are so many great things in this movie. I mean, for me, sitting and waiting for 16 years from the time Return of the Jedi came out till this movie, and it was just so much fun getting to see Jedi again. Qui-Gon was just, you know, something else. I mean, just a complete badass. And get to see Obi-Wan as a young man was really, really cool. And like you mentioned before, seeing the council, I was so excited. I'm like, oh, my God, we get to see the Jedi Council. Because we've heard Yoda mention, you know, council that I keep. And you're like, what is all this about? And you hear these little nuances and pieces throughout the original trilogy, and now we finally get to see it. And it just, I mean, so much action in this film from just start to finish. Darth Maul. I mean, we finally get another Sith, and it looks like this. I'm like, good grief. And like I said, the lightsaber battle at the end was really, really cool. To me, it could have been longer maybe, but it turned out pretty much the way they did it. I liked the double-bladed lightsaber. I thought that was a really cool aspect, and having them split up and then having Obi-Wan have to get his revenge in a way. You know, he kind of had to touch into the dark side there for a little bit, touch his anger in order to take care of Maul. And, well, he thought he took care of Maul, but, you know, we're finding out in the Clone Wars he didn't. So, you know, I don't really want to say anything much negative about it. But as far as why I love it, that's a lot of the things why I love it. But it's still, you know, you think, wow, I'm saying this much about it, and it's my number six. So you can imagine what the other ones are going to be, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, no, can't say enough about the duel. I mean, it's so good. I mean, I line up like all of the lightsaber duels compared to this, even though, you know, these, you know, may not be crazy about these characters, but, well, then again, who isn't? I mean, who doesn't love Darth Maul and Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon? But it's such a fast-paced duel. I mean, Nick Gillard just nailed this duel. I mean, it's perfect. It's perfectly shot. Like, I love how the camera is pretty much always kind of zoomed out, so you get a good sense of what's going on, and it's just great.
Yeah. I agree. Before I jump into my number six, I do want to preface this by, you know, agreeing with Jazz that I do look at these as a whole saga, a whole story. So sometimes it's hard for me to like rank them all in whatever order, because they all fit together as a story very well, in my opinion. But that saying, and most of my list probably could flip around and fluctuate depending on how recently I've seen some of the movies or whatever my mood is. But at this point, this is the way my list fell. And I know I'm going to get some flack for saying this. And I want to preface this by saying I love all the films. But at the moment, number six.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Going to say this.
A New Hope.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
So
I thought he was going to say Empire Strikes Back.
That's exactly what I was going to say. What?
Is A New Hope. Like, I love the film. R2 and 3PO, following them, especially the first half of the film, just seeing everything from their point of view is so entertaining. That's why they're two of my favorite characters. The film is a little slow at first, but it definitely picks up once they hit the Death Star, and the trench run at the end of the movie is phenomenal. One of my favorite scenes of the entire film. But it's a great setup for Luke Skywalker's story. And it definitely sets up his hero journey that he takes to the rest of the original trilogy. And I love seeing Obi-Wan as this wise old hermit. You know, he's, kind of a little crazy because he's been out in the desert for 19 years, almost 20 years, you know. But he's this wise character that we always look to for, wisdom until we get to Yoda in Empire Strikes Back. But it's a very simple chapter of the story. And I love simplicity, but sometimes I like a little bit more layers. And this doesn't have quite as many layers as some of the other films. So I guess at the moment that's why this one is number 6. But like I said, I enjoy it from start to finish. So
yeah. No, then that's... I totally get that, Jason. I'm with you. It is a little bit slow, but at times. But I'll leave my comments for A New Hope till a little bit later on. Chris, did you want to say anything?
No, I'll do the same. I'll leave my comments till I get to Star Wars.
Sure. Okay, well then we're on to...
That's very interesting that you put the one that started it all at the very back end of the caboose, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think it's a great jumping off point. For the series, but it's just it's the one that catches your attention, but everything else is what gives you more of the meat of the story, in my opinion. So that's and I like that a lot. So it's that's where I'm at.
Yeah, no, that's really cool though. And you think about it too, Jason. I mean, like you and I were obviously neither of us were alive during the OT. So I mean, yes, like we still essentially grew up in the OT. I mean, I know you've said it before. You were introduced through the special editions and. I actually did see the original films on VHS before the special editions came out, but like you were saying earlier too, and like what Jazz was saying, these are a saga, and if you do look at these films as a saga, yes, A New Hope, historically speaking, hit it off, but it's not necessarily the greatest of the films in a sense, as far as the layers and the meat, as you called it. So yeah, enough of that though. Let's jump into our number 5. So, for me, my number 5 is Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. And for the longest time, this was honestly my least favorite of the films. But I've watched a lot of The Phantom Menace in the last couple of months, what with it coming out on 3D and all, and I watched it a few more times on the Blu-ray afterwards. But I just rewatched Attack of the Clones the other night, and I forgot how darn good this movie is. I mean, again, what I was always hung up with was kind of the acting. The acting wasn't so great. But in all honesty, with, now it's been what now? Almost 10 years since it's been out? Yeah, 10 years, right, Jason?
It would be 10 years tomorrow.
10 years tomorrow, that's right.
The 16th.
And I think you just essentially you get used to it because it's such a great story that you can kind of, let the acting slide. And it's not so bad that it totally takes away from the film. I think some of the romance stuff is a little bit cheesy, but it does a good job of really moving the story along and really giving us a sense of, how Anakin's going to be set up to fall. I mean, I think a lot of fans from the OT era and even a lot of the fans, waiting for the PT to come out, we kind of essentially wanted Episode 3 to be drawn out into 3 films. We wanted to see, how Anakin fell and how all that happened, but you really need to set that up well, and I think Episode 2 does that extremely well. I mean, as I've mentioned millions of times, how about the scene where, Anakin slaughtering the Tusken Raiders? That's awesome. What a powerful scene. And I think we really get a sense of the emotional turmoil that's going to start beginning for Anakin. And also not to mention, the fact we get to see Yoda fight for the first time. That's awesome. And, Jason, you're creme de la creme, the Jedi fight in the arena at the end. I mean, it's...
Yes.
The whole end of that movie is just full of action. People have been waiting to see for so long. But even before we get to the action, You know, the film is actually balanced quite well because you've got Obi-Wan essentially in a Law and Order episode figuring out a crime. And it's really cool seeing Detective Obi-Wan do his thing. And it's exciting. We see the clones. You know, we get to go to Kamino, which is an awesome planet. We meet Jango Fett, have a sweet hand-to-hand fight with a Jedi. I mean, we find out where Bubba Fett gets the dent in his helmet. Did you guys ever notice that? If you look at the Bubba Fett helmet, there's a dent in it. It's from when Obi-Wan kicks Jango in the helmet in that fight. Did you guys notice that?
Yes, I did.
Dang it. Yeah, I was hoping I'd... Yeah. Crap. All right. Whatever.
I think you've mentioned it a couple of times.
Sure. So, yeah, you guys knew. I know. We're all hardcore fans. I get it.
that and the fact that, you know, Jango knocked his head on the door as the, you know, the Slave One is taking off there, you know.
Ooh, I didn't notice that.
Gee, reminiscent of the Stormtroopers. Yep. Put their head in the door and A New Hope, so.
Yeah. So, but anyway, yes, yeah, so that's my number five. I mean, I think episode two does a great job of moving the story along, of really letting us see a maturing Anakin and seeing how, you know, basically, you know, his love for Padme is going to really be a huge issue for him. I mean, it sets up episode three so well, you know, minus the kind of the pitiful acting at times and some of the cheesy romance. It's a great film. So that's my number five. What about you, Chris?
Well, I guess I can just roll right on into my number five, which happens to be Attack of the Clones. So, and the reason this is higher up on higher than the Phantom Menace is for two reasons: Yoda fighting, oh my goodness, and of course the whole Jedi battle at the end. I mean, that one shot of just seeing all those lightsabers just popping on is just like, oh, here we go. Strap in, because you're fixing to have some fun. But you're right. There are so many good things with this movie, and there's a lot of things that people over-criticize, I believe, in this film. Yeah, the acting is awkward. The romance is awkward. Well, it's supposed to be, in my mind. That's what the point of their relationship is at. They're very awkward. Anakin doesn't know how to act. I mean, how many teenage guys or adult guys, when they get around somebody that they like, really know how to act? I mean,
I do, Chris. I know really well. I mean, if I can write a book on that,
sure,
but.
Sure. Okay.
Anyway, continue, Chris.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, let's face it, us guys, we kind of, when we get into that awkward stage of dealing with a woman, we're just dorks. I mean, that's just, I mean, we do it really well. So the fact that Anakin plays this part, I thought he played it really well. The relationship is really awkward. Her kind of wanting to give in, but then not wanting to give in, and then not. She's just back and forth. And she's struggling just as much as he is. And, you know, Obi-Wan, like you'd mentioned earlier, Obi-Wan is trying to solve this murder or attempted murder. And Anakin is too caught up in his own head. You know, he's dealing with his mother. He's dealing with Padme. He's dealing with trying to become a Jedi. So he's just going every kind of direction. And I really wish we could have seen a little more on the slaughter of the Sand People. But, you know, oh well. But, I mean, the ending sequence really makes up for any shortcomings that the rest of the movie has. Mm-hmm. That whole scene where you got Dooku just basically beats down Anakin and Obi-Wan there. Just kind of, like, takes them by surprise and knocks them both down. And then all of a sudden you hear the little cane tap, tap. Yoda coming in there, and you're just like, oh, here we go. It's on now. And I thought they did a wonderful job. I thought the way Yoda fights, when I first saw that, I was like, oh my goodness, that is just perfect. It's not campy, and it's not, you know, to me, they just picked a perfect balance of how you would think he would fight. And to me, it always cracks me up every time when he gets through fighting. He's exerting all this energy, and then what does he do? He sucks his cane and starts, you know, crouching like he's struggling to walk again. Like, oh, come on, man. You're just – what a joke here. He's just, you know, playing everybody for a fool. But, you know, that's just his way. But that's just the way he does things. So, you know, looks are deceiving for Yoda. But I'm sure we'll hear a lot more of this later coming up from Jason. So I just figure we'll kick it on over to Jason, and what is his number five, man?
Real quick, before I even do that, though, I like what you say, Chris, though, about, you know, making sense of those awkward romantic scenes. You know, I think, you know, the words they say aren't necessarily that bad, because you're right. I mean, it's always awkward. And if you think about it, Anakin has no experience of romantic feelings for a woman. You know, I mean, he's been a Jedi now for the past 10 years. He's not been going on dates and whatnot. So, I mean, it is a bit forced. It is a bit awkward. I think the lines might not necessarily... They're delivered a little bit flat as far as an acting standpoint, I think. But overall, I think, you know, you bring up a really good point of the fact that it is. It's an awkward stage for both of them. I was talking with a girl I work with today who just started getting into Star Wars because her significant other is prodding her into it, and she's watched the PT so far. And she said she always found it really funny in episode two. She really liked all three of them too. She said in episode two she found it funny, you know, every time Anakin and Padme are together in another scene after they've left for Naboo, she's got less and less clothing on. So it's like she's not making it any easier for him. So
exactly, he's, you know, raking hormones.
Yeah. So exactly. Anyway, Jason, what's your number five?
Okay, and this one is also going to get flack for, but number five, yeah, yes, Chris, I'm sorry. Yes, Matt, I'm sorry. But number five is going to be Empire Strikes Back.
That's no justification for that.
This is my list. I can make it however I want. not to say I don't love the film. It's great. I mean, obviously, this podcast is The Wampa's Lair. This comes from this movie.
And then you put it at number five. Oh, my goodness.
Hey. Second-generation Star Wars fan here, you know? Give me a break. But like I said, I love the film. It's great. But it's... The snow battle is something that we'd never seen before. Battle on Hoth, obviously, Chris, you love that.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. I love the scenes with Yoda and Luke on Dagobah, where Yoda just starts delving into the philosophy of the Force. And then, of course, the emotional impact of the duel between Luke and Vader on Bespin and the reveal to Luke that, you know, no, I am your father. That whole thing. Those are just great, great moments. And I really like the journey that Luke takes through the film. And while there's a lot of great character moments from some of the other characters, you know, Leia, Han, Chewie even, to be honest, the other story between, you know, that group, I find less interesting than Luke's. And so I guess that's one reason why this film is lower on my list. And not that it's uninteresting. I just – Luke's journey through the Empire Strikes Back I find really, really fascinating. And then this other one is just sort of like the side story, the one that just sort of, you know, keeps coming back around every so often to connect with Luke's. Not that I don't dislike it; it's just not as much as the other as Luke's story. So that's why Empire Strikes Back is number five.
But like you said, Jason. I mean, hey, you're entitled to your opinion.
Exactly.
You know, and the fact that you're still a huge Star Wars—I mean, the majority of Star Wars fans love The Empire Strikes Back. And again, like you said, you don't dislike it. The fact that it's not necessarily one of your favorites. Again, shows just the power of these films, though. I mean, the fact that each of them can say so much, I think, is huge, and that's awesome. So
right, and I've never claimed to be a normal Star Wars fan. You know, I've always said I'm weird. So right. You know, hey, give me a break here.
Yeah.
You know,
remember, so. Chris, he likes the Naboo starfighter.
Yeah.
So
good point.
No, that's awesome, Jason. Though that's cool. This is why I like doing things with you, because we have such different ideas. So, but let's hop into number four. For me, my number four is episode four, A New Hope.
Blasphemy.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you though, Jason. You know, yes, it's actually A New Hope was not the first Star Wars film I saw. Empire was. And, you know, I mean, I love A New Hope. I mean, in the sense of what it did for the franchise. I think the reason I have it ranked higher than Attack of the Clones and The Phantom Menace is I think it's just, it's a more adult film, in my opinion, in the sense of the acting and what's going on and all that. But
what I absolutely love about A New Hope is, you know, the opening battle. I mean, the opening scene of A New Hope is just so awesome. I mean, here's this ship running from another ship, and there's this firefight, and then, you know, you think it's over, but then there's this huge fight on the ship. You got these awesome stormtroopers, and then, you know, this menacing figure choking a guy out right in the first 10 minutes of the film. I mean, it's incredibly well done, and it's bracketed so well, because the end of that film, you know, the infamous throne room scene with that awesome music, which you can hear over at the Sarlacc Pit, which I actually remember as I was writing up my list this weekend. Chris is giving us thumbs up right now. As I was writing up my list this weekend, I texted Chris because the throne room song came on my iPod, and I was like, Chris, I'm waiting to hear, you know, Lord Bruticus's voice come on and introduce your show every time I hear the song now. So it feels a little empty without it. But, you know, I mean, it's just such a great film. And, you know, that cantina scene, oh my gosh, I will always love the cantina scene and meeting.
Sorry.
Yes, you've got it, Jason. You know, and we meet Han, who shot second, evidently. Just kidding. You know, it's a great film. And like you said earlier, Jason, you know, it does a great job of kicking off Luke Skywalker story. I mean, this is Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces. This is his book in movie form, essentially. It's the start of the hero's journey. And, you know, when you think of the OT, you know, I think it's fair to say that most people up until probably maybe the mid to late 90s assumed that the Star Wars saga was a story about Luke Skywalker. It's not, obviously, till later on it becomes clear to us it's the story of Anakin and Darth Vader. But this is Luke Skywalker is the hero of this film, and we get a great introduction into him. And, you know, I mean, he's going to be the true hero in the way that his father was not. And this film does a great job introducing to him. You know, and my only real big qualm is kind of what you were saying too, Jason. The beginning of the film is just a bit slow. So, you know, that takes away from it a little bit. But other than that, you know, I mean, it is a great film. So that's my number four. Chris, what about you?
What about my number four?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, well, my number three and number four are tied, so I'm going to give you my 3.2, and that would be Revenge of the Sith. This movie, to me, I don't think George could have done anything better to complete the two trilogies, with the exception of having Qui-Gon's voice come up over at the end when Yoda is telling Obi-Wan about Qui-Gon. I think that would have been just so awesome if they could have gotten that done. Maybe had like a little, his image to start to flicker up standing beside Yoda. That would have been amazing. But just, I mean, everything in this movie, seeing him, Anakin, going down the wrong road. You know he's going down the wrong road. And you can't do anything to stop it. You're just sitting there as somebody watching this thinking, nope, don't do it, don't do it. And I always liked what Ewan McGregor said in one of the interviews. He was talking about this movie. He said, we've all done it as human beings. We get frustrated when we're in a relationship, we're in love with somebody. You do something that you regret. Because if you being in that situation, you don't have that mental ability at that point to step back and look at the whole picture and say, okay, everything will be just fine. And that's where you make your mistakes. It just always stuck with me when he said that about Anakin, because you literally see the little mistakes he just keeps doing and doing. And he just, by the time he gets to where he cuts off Mace Windu's hand, is he's just made all these little bitty steps to where now he's gone too far and he can't stop. And he just literally goes over the edge and full-fledged to the dark side. And you just almost see it in almost an instant. And the fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan is just, I mean, spectacular. And the fact that they used it to cut in with Palpatine and Yoda, cutting those in together was even more brilliant. And I honestly think Yoda was kicking his butt. I look at that fact that Yoda was winning that fight if he hadn't have lost his cape, fell all the way down to the bottom, I think Yoda would have come out on top against Palpatine at that moment, because I think he had him on the run. But, you know, that wasn't the story, so that's just kind of the way it looked like to me. But I just love the way, especially with Anakin and Obi-Wan, their fight, they were just so equally matched. It was just like a grudge match, just grueling, last man standing. And what got Anakin at the end was he, in that one line, you underestimate my power. Where in sense, he's actually saying, I'm out of control. I can't control myself, and I'm blind. I can't see the forest for the trees. And Obi-Wan takes him out with one swipe, takes out both legs and an arm with one swing. So, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, just those words that Obi-Wan says to him after that swipe is just like, to me, perfect. I mean, it's like, you know, he's, in a sense, he is talking about his brother. You know, he trained him, he raised him, he was his apprentice, he was his master, and he's just, I'm like, I taught you the best I know how, he's hurt to me. Obi-Wan is deeply hurt that Anakin has fallen and there was nothing that he could do about it, so.
Yeah.
And so I have that as a tie with my number three, and I will wait on that one. So I'll kick it to, what is it, Jason now for his number four?
Yeah. Yes.
And I think I got an idea of what this is going to be, but go ahead.
Well, I'm pretty sure I'm going to prove you wrong right here, Chris. All right. Number four is The Phantom Menace. So
is that what you're going to say, Chris?
No. I was expecting Jedi.
Oh.
Yes, well,
he loves that last hour of Jedi, so I know that'll be higher.
Yes, indeed. But the Phantom Menace, welcome back to Star Wars, everybody. You know, it's 1999 was amazing because, you know, I just gotten used to the fact that, you know, Star Wars was pretty cool and stuff after the, you know, the special editions and everything. And then when The Phantom Menace came around in 1999, it was coming out the, you know, month of my birthday, like all the other Star Wars films normally do. But special editions had come out like January, February, and March. And so I wasn't really keyed in on that as much. But with it coming out like the weekend before my birthday or whatever it was, I was super excited for it. And I got to go and see it, and I was just floored. I loved just seeing the Jedi. Just seeing the Jedi made me so happy. I loved all the lightsaber action. Qui-Gon Jinn was amazing. Seeing Obi-Wan as a young man was really cool. The Jedi Council was awesome to see, even at, you know, 10 years old. I thought that was really cool. And then, of course, you know, my fandom of Jar Jar Binks was kicked off there, but, you know, that's another story. We'll save that for another time. But I just love the film because it was just a really fun trip on this adventure. And then as I got older, I was able to go back and notice all the little intricacies with the politics and stuff and how that sets up things for the later films and things like that. And just the way that Palpatine just has his fingers, you know, in all these little pies at the same time, just manipulating everything from this very benign, you know, very kind persona. You know, he's this nice old man. He was a senator. Oh, wow, I'm so surprised I got elected chancellor. That's exciting. But no, really, that's going back, being older and rewatching that was really cool. And then the whole idea of Anakin being the chosen one also was resonated more with me as I got older. But it's just a fun movie. And you guys have already talked about this, but the duel at the end, oh my Lanta, to quote another podcast host, is just amazing. And throw in the starfighter duel at the and the Gungan battle. I'm a fan of Gungans. I think as a race, they're really cool. Sorry, Carl. but
Man, but you're all set.
Yeah. No, it was just, it was terrific. I had so much fun watching it. And I think that's one reason why I like Star Wars as a whole, is because it's a lot of fun to watch Star Wars. And I think a lot of movies today, with the exception of the Avengers that just came out, amazing, by the way, just lose sight of the fact that movies are supposed to be fun and entertaining. All these movies try to take themselves way too seriously. And Star Wars, for the most part, hasn't really done that. And I think that's always a lot of fun to see. So there's my number four.
Great.
Phantom Menace.
Yeah. You always, I mean, the thing I like about your points, Jason, is, you know, I often don't see things the same way you do. Not that I necessarily disagree, but I don't see things the same way. But, you know, you're right. I mean, The Phantom Menace is a fun movie. You know, and that's exactly, I think, what the intention was. I mean, it's meant to sort of mirror Episode 4. You know, if you notice that, I mean, it's the same paced adventure. And I think it might be a little bit more excitement to Episode 1 than Episode 4. But, you know, it's kind of the same pace, and it's meant to end with this. I mean, if you think about it, if Episode 1 had been the first one released, it was kind of like Episode 4. It could have been a standalone film. You know, and it gives us, you know, it gives us a nice kickstart to a saga that's about to turn very dark. So.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so we're down to our top three now. So I'm going to hop right into mine. My number three is Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. You know, and I think I was really surprised. I honestly always thought the prequels would be my last three. But, you know, after rewatching A New Hope, actually just last week, and then rewatching Revenge of the Sith last night, I mean, Revenge of the Sith is awesome. And I was almost debating putting it to my number two, but just didn't quite have enough for me. But Revenge of the Sith is awesome in the sense of what it does for us emotionally. I think it's the most raw film of the Star Wars series. We see a character who has been struggling so much with what does it mean to be a Jedi? What does it mean to be, you know, in love? What does it mean to be, you know, who I'm supposed to be? He's been struggling with this all along, and there's this manipulative force behind that constantly tricking him and making him second guess himself, and ultimately we see him fall here in Episode 3. You know, Episode 3 is it does the perfect job, as Chris was saying, of bridging the PT and the OT. I mean, by the end of that film, everything is very clear to us why things are the way they are. And you know, we get to see the iconic Darth Vader versus Obi-Wan Kenobi duel on Mustafar and the lava pit. I will say I was a little disappointed in this duel. I think the very beginning of it is awesome, and it gets worse and worse until the very end. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's too fast. Maybe it's just the camera angles or what. I remember being very, and I still am, a bit unimpressed with that particular duel. I think it could have been done way better. And I think if that had been done better, it might very well have been my number two. And I'm not saying I don't like the duel, but it definitely disappointed me a little bit. But we also get to see, you know, iconic good versus evil and Yoda versus Sidious. But like I was saying earlier, the greatest thing about Revenge of the Sith is actually just the way that actually a lot of the cinematography is done as well for those emotional points. I think that this film has, you know, without doubt, the most emotional impact to us. I mean, we see, obviously, the fall of Anakin. We see the heartbreak this young man is dealing with. But also, we see the end of the Jedi Order. And I remember, I mean, the two scenes that really, you know, just really hit me when I was watching it again last night was, one of them I posted up on our Facebook wall is, of course, this one where Anakin is staring off across Coruscant and Padme is doing the same thing from her apartment building. And you just see the pain in Anakin's face, the pain in knowing that what he's about to do is just, he has to do this because he's so in love with Padme, or so he thinks. And also the scene when Order 66 happens, the music is beautiful. And we see this perfect plan of Palpatine's, you know, fleshed out. I mean, everything he's been plotting for the past, you know, 15, 20 years is finally coming to its head. And it's so successful, the Jedi don't even see it coming. And then, you know, we get this flash to Yoda on Kashyyyk, and he drops his cane and just grabs his heart. I mean, I think that's absolutely stunning. I mean, it just shows Yoda himself is almost crippled by the pain that he is feeling in the Force right there. I mean, everything in Revenge of the Sith. I mean, to me, Revenge of the Sith is the complete opposite of the Return of the Jedi, where everything ends on a high note. Revenge of the Sith is everything just ends so sadly. You know, we see, you know, that when Darth Vader's finally put into his suit, I mean, here's this man being imprisoned by his selfishness. I mean, every choice that he tried to make was what he thought was good, yet it's left him completely alone, and it's just so sad. But then we have this great scene at the end with, you know, Luke being delivered to Owen and Beru, and they're obviously staring off into that iconic sunset, which gives us hope for the new series. But it's just, what's in this film as far as, you know, use your term of meatiness, Jason, there's just so much to Revenge of the Sith that you can really sink your teeth into and, you know, really identify with, which is why Revenge of the Sith is so high on my list and almost higher. So I love this film. That's enough of my rant.
All right, Chris, number three. This one is tied with Revenge of the Sith, correct?
Yes, correct. My number three is Return of the Jedi. I know some of the people and say, I remember hearing Steve Glosson. You know, he's got into Star Wars just a couple of years later because he's a few years younger. He likes Return of the Jedi, I believe, more. I hear a lot of people that are a little bit younger than I am love Return of the Jedi more than they do Star Wars or Empire. But for me, I don't know. It was really great to have it end on a real happy ending. But in a way, it's depressing because there's no more Star Wars, and we thought that was going to be it. But I love Return of the Jedi. Just everything about it. You come in Jabba's palace. We finally got to see who Jabba the Hutt was. You hear about him, and you want to know, who is this guy that's so powerful? And then you see this big fat slug, and as a kid I'm thinking, wow, but then I'm also thinking, how in the heck is this person, you know, all powerful like he is? I'm like, why can't you just walk up and kill him? You know, that's my thought process. And then of course we see later that Carrie Fisher does. I see Carrie Fisher, she would say Princess Leia, I guess, there. And what does she do? She chokes him with her chains. I mean, the Sarlacc pit battle, great battle, great little quick short battle. Luke goes back to Yoda and he gets to see Yoda before he dies, which was, to me, was very depressing when I first saw that at 13 years old. I was just like, oh man, Yoda dies. I'm like, are you kidding me? But just everything about this movie, you get to the end and it's just like you have this humongous, massive battle that, like, I swear it goes on for like an hour. But it's just like nonstop. There's just so many great things. You got a ground battle going on. You got a space battle going on. And one of my all-time just favorite shots. Lando's coming into the, when they first get to the Death Star, and they're going in expecting to go right on in to the Death Star, and they realize that the shield is still up, and they have to, oh my God, everybody has to pull up. But that first turn around, and you see through that shot through the Falcon cockpit of just massive amounts of ships, TIE fighters, TIE interceptors, all these various ships just flying by the Falcon. He's just like, oh my gosh. And I always crack up when you hear that one pilot says there's too many of them. Yeah, right. That's not what he would be saying. He'd be saying some other few choice words when he'd turn around and see all that mess coming at you. So it's a family friendly show and a family movie. We won't go into that area.
Exactly. But
this whole battle was just so beautifully orchestrated by Palpatine. I mean, here they're expecting the Death Star to be not be operational. It's not even finished, but yeah, all of a sudden, wow, it's operational, and it just starts taking out some of the Star Destroyers and the Republic cruisers and stuff. And you're just like, oh my goodness! One little quick shot, boom, they're gone. But it's so uplifting to have this band of rebels that they just keep plugging at it until finally things kind of turn their way, and then start just chipping at things until finally they somehow blow everything up. I mean, you kind of look at it sometimes, you're like, how in the world did they do that? You sit there and watch it, but you still sometimes can't quite realize and grasp exactly what they've done, you know, because I mean, it's just a huge, huge deal. So for me, that end battle, and just, I mean, everything else, the rancor, the just everything, it's just such a cool I mean, you go from Star Wars, then you go to Empire, you get all these other worlds, and then this one, you get all these other worlds. And to me, it was really cool to get a jungle planet. Because as a kid, I remember, okay, yeah, Star Wars, you got the desert. Well, I don't live anywhere near a desert, so I don't really know what it's like to be around a desert. We don't get a whole lot of snow, so I really don't know what Hoth would be like. And we definitely don't know what space or being what it would be like on a space station. But then you get to Endor and you're just like, oh, this is so cool. I have trees out in my backyard. I got this little small stretch of woods. We can just go. And I'm in Star Wars. You know, as a kid, I'm like, I am actually in Star Wars because I see it on the screen now and I've got it right here. So a lot of it, that's why it's just a lot of fun. And I mean, it ends a great story. So it just kind of wraps up a great story. And I know some people probably feel like it could have been, they didn't care much for the Ewoks, but I love the Ewoks. I think the Ewoks were a perfect choice for this movie. So I'll kick it over to anybody else if y'all have any comments.
I'm gonna save mine.
Me too.
Okay.
Well, then, Jason, why don't you hop in your number three?
All right, my number three will be Attack of the Clones.
I am shocked.
I am too. Well, Jason, are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure, and I was a little shocked to see that it only made it to number three as well.
Are you reading the right list?
Yes. Yes, okay. I am. It's right here in front of me. Number three, Attack of the Clones. I thought it would be at least one more higher, if not two. But that just that'll just show, for those of you that know that how much of a fan of the Attack of the Clones I am, that just shows you how much more I like the others. So, the other two that are on my list, but Attack of the Clones, let's start here. This is really where my Star Wars fandom just sort of exploded. It was ramping up. I really enjoyed it with the special editions. The Phantom Menace got me really excited about it. But once Attack of the Clones hit, I just gobbled up all of the novels I could, all the expanded universe that I could get my hands on at the library after seeing this movie because I loved it. It was just so much to just that you could branch off of this movie, and that's why we have the Clone Wars now, because this starts the Clone Wars. You know, we have the TV series because of this film, and you know, we hear about the Clone Wars in A New Hope and we're like, well, what's that? Well, this is what starts it all, and I love this film. Oh goodness, let's get into specifics now because I'm just sort of rambling. But Obi-Wan's detective mission that he goes on, always fun, always entertaining. I think I like the dialogue interchange between Obi-Wan and Jango more than I like the actual battle between Obi-Wan and Jango on Kamino, just because how they're, you know, so polite, and you know, but there's, you can just tell each of them is just ready to jump at each other, you know, because they both realize that this is the man that they're looking for, you know. Or Obi-Wan realizes Jango's his target, and Jango's like, oh, he's finally tracked me down, you know, just so polite, you know. There's the, you know, Ton Wee's there. She's probably all going over her tall head there, but I just love that dialogue scene. I grant you, some of the romantic scenes between Anakin and Padme, cheesy, but like Chris said, awkward because it's supposed to be awkward. but we get to Geonosis, and as soon as Obi-Wan phones home that the droid armies are being built on Geonosis, from that point on in the movie is just uphill from there. I love the rest of the movie from that point on. Count Dooku, I love Christopher Lee as Count Dooku. One of my favorite Sith. I can't really explain why, but he's got the coolest saber of anybody. That curved blade, and I, you know, I don't know if anybody else agrees to that, but that's one of my favorite hilts. But then the arena battle is by far my favorite battle, single battle in the prequels, and is ranks up there with either tied for first or just second for my favorite overall battle of the entire films. Simply because I love seeing all the Jedi in action, and we get introduced to Kit Fisto. but just amazing action, and it's just so, there's so much going on in the arena. You know, you look at the background and there's Jedi doing all sorts of things, you know, getting a shot, destroying droids, whatever. It's just amazing. And it's really interesting to see, going from the Phantom Menace to Attack of the Clones, where the Jedi are at. Because in the Phantom Menace, you know, they're sitting in their halls, you know, talking about, you know, well, the Sith couldn't return. That's impossible, you know. To all of a sudden, they're being forced out onto this battlefield by, you know, the politics of the day. You know, the Separatists are starting to secede, and, you know, the Republic doesn't have any mode of defense right away, and except for the Jedi. And so they're forced to jump into this battle that they weren't necessarily designed for. And then, of course, the duel between Yoda and Dooku at the end is one of my favorite duels, because it's just so much fun to see Yoda just kick butt. So it's a fun, like I said, with The Phantom Menace, it's just such a fun movie. And then going back and rewatching it, you know, getting into the politics and, you know, figuring out all how, you know, Palpatine's manipulations are going through. It's just such a, it sets up so much more for the rest, for the next film, and then for the rest of the series, because everything builds off of the fact that the Clone Wars is what brought about the end of the Jedi. And everything else in the rest of the films basically hinges on that reason. So I just love that film. So I'm going to stop before I bore anybody else.
Jason, you're anything but boring. No, I mean, I will, I'm not going to lie. I'm really shocked that this was only number three for you, but, you know, you do bring up a lot of great points about, you know, about this movie. It's good. It's a good movie. Hands down.
It is. It is. And I think people unjustly lambast it because of the awkward romance scenes. I think it's an unfair characterization. You know, so.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go too much into that. So.
Yeah.
Because well, I want to keep this positive. So.
Sure. Well, let's get into our number two then. For me, my number two is episode 6, Return of the Jedi. So obviously we know which my number one is, but that's okay. But Return of the Jedi is an awesome film. And in all honesty, if I were to, I'm almost tempted now this coming weekend to sit down and watch Revenge of the Sith and then Return of the Jedi to see which one I like more. I think for Return of the Jedi, again, it has history. I always loved Return of the Jedi when I was young. So it has that. You know, I mean, I've been watching that movie for a good 10, 15 years before Revenge of the Sith even came out, so it has that ingrained into you. But, you know, kind of some of the things Chris was mentioning as well, you know, I mean, we've got so much good stuff here. And what's actually really surprising is I'm not crazy about the first third of the movie there, the stuff on in Jabba's Palace, which is really weird because I know most people love that stuff. I'm not saying I don't like it, but, you know, the fight with the Rancor, I remember the first time I saw it, I thought it was awesome, but it becomes less and less appealing to me every time I see it, which is really odd because I love the Rancor. I think it's an awesome creature, and I love the Rancor Keeper. He was, I mean, he's probably the sexiest character in Star Wars, no doubt about that. So
after Jabba the Hutt, right?
Obviously. Actually, I remember the very first, one of the first toys I had as a kid was the Rancor Keeper toy that my uncle gave to me one time because it was his when he was a kid, and I had no idea what it was until much later on when I realized he was a Star Wars toy. But I always pretended he was Rambo. I mean, he certainly has the body for it. So anyway, enough of the Rancor Keeper. But you know, the Sarlacc Pit battle is awesome, and you know, it gave us a great name to it, a wonderful podcast. Oh, see what I did there? And
nice.
But you know, like you've said a million times, Jason, and what Chris was saying earlier is, you know, the last, you know, 40 minutes of that movie, that end battle of Endor is awesome, absolutely awesome. And you know, I don't mean to repeat you here, Chris, but you're exactly right. I mean, we have a land battle, we have a space battle, and we have a sweet lightsaber duel. The duel in Return of the Jedi, I just rewatched this again the other night. It is actually quite fast. In comparison to the duel in Empire, I mean, certainly no episode one or no episode three, but in all honesty, to me, it's just as quick as the Obi-Wan versus Dooku fight in episode two. I mean, Luke is actually going at it pretty quick there at the beginning, and not to mention, you know, the choir at the end when he you know, goes nuts on Darth Vader. And this space battle is hands down the best dogfight battle in the history of films, in my opinion. I mean, I remember being all excited for Revenge of the Sith's space battle, but it just, you know, the Revenge of the Sith space battle is background to everything else, which stunk. And I think that really takes away from how awesome it could have been. But with Return of the Jedi, I mean, again, none of our main characters are involved. And yeah, Lando's a main character, but, you know, I mean, the big three, they're all off doing other things. So, you know, you can kind of just get into the cockpits of these everyday pilots, and it's just so awesome. It's shot so well, and you know, watching those, you know, the Mon Calamari Star Cruisers going up against the Star Destroyers is awesome. And actually, I was thinking of this too over the weekend, and I thought this would be fun to do, just, you know, occasionally on the show, or, you know, with our listeners and whatnot. Is, I don't know if you guys have ever noticed this, but as a Star Wars fan, you tend to see Star Wars everywhere to some degree. I mean, we kind of put Star Wars into things we see on an everyday basis. And as I was walking through downtown Boston this past weekend, one of my favorite things to do is just look at the big buildings and stuff. I really like the architecture. But there's these two buildings that sit right next to each other. They're two of the skyscrapers in the financial district. And one is all glass, and it comes to almost a point at the top, and it really looks like a Star Destroyer. And the one next to it is very curved and rounded and very organic looking, like a Mon Calamari Star Cruiser. And as I was walking between these buildings, I just pretended they were shooting at each other. And it was, I don't know, for a second, I was, you know, 9 years old again, and it was awesome.
It's the pictures.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of doing. I was thinking I'd go back next weekend and take a picture of these and see if, you know, what people think of that as well. And actually, the building looks like a Star Destroyer. There's actually a break halfway up the building where there's like this huge open window in the middle of the building that almost looks like the, you know, like the hangar bay on the bottom of a Star Destroyer. It's awesome. So I will take a picture and put that up next weekend. But, you know, I mean, that end space battle is just so good. And I'm with you, Chris. Actually, I enjoy the Ewoks. I really like them a lot. Especially the Ewoks cartoon series that was a spinoff of that. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember that?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
I was, oh, no.
I found it online, and I have it at the time. And it is definitely a bit childish, but I actually really enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, this film is still great, and it brings the saga to a close so well. I mean, things have come full circle. You know, Vader has been redeemed. He's now Anakin Skywalker again. Luke has made the heroic journey that Anakin failed to make. I mean, the moral implications of the film is essentially, you know, if you put up these two characters, you know, the tragic hero and the hero, you know, you realize that the tragic hero made a mistake because he made decisions based only on himself. And when we see Luke here at the end, you know, he completely gives himself over in love for his father. And that obviously redeems his father. It helps defeat the Sith Lord. I mean, it does a great job of giving us these moral issues and these moral answers. Not to mention just, again, these awesome battles in Return of the Jedi. So I've ranted enough about Return of the Jedi, but it's a great film. It's so much fun. And again, you know, to me, Return of the Jedi is a three-part movie. You know, I mean, you got the beginning in Jabba's Palace, you've got the middle, which is essentially where, you know, it ties all the films together. You know, we find out about Leia, we find out about Luke's true past, and then we have the closing battle. I mean, it's just, it's paced so well, I think. So that is my number two. What about you, Chris? What is your number two? I have a feeling I know.
Well, before I get into that, one other little comment. You were talking about the space battle in Return of the Jedi. And to me, it's a little reminiscent to the battle of the Death Star Trench Run, the first one. It's, to me, those two battles, they've got to get it done or else. Because next time you watch the Return of the Jedi, the space battle, look at where the good guys are. You have a Death Star, then you have them, and then you have all these Star Destroyers. So they're stuck. They have nowhere to go. It's either fight or die, one or the other. And so they just keep fighting until, and it make it even worse is they're sitting out there fighting because they're waiting for Han to get the shield down, and they don't know what's taking him so long. You know, he's down there, you know, eating cake and drinking some coffee or something, you know. they don't know, and they're just up there, and then finally when it comes down, they're like, oh, thank God, great, let's go. But, what do you think my number two is then?
New Hope? It's definitely A New Hope.
Okay, well, my number two, is Star Wars, and I don't go by A New Hope. I'm old school. It's Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi. Until I have to say A New Hope, and when I look at some of these younger whippersnappers, are like, Star Wars, well, which one? Star Wars. But anyway, to me, I have to put Star Wars number two. It's just, I can't put it anywhere else but number two, because it is what started everything. All six of these movies, like y'all say, they're great. They're awesome. Every one of them are awesome. But to me, when I see any time I look at the original Star Wars movie, special editions, the original, A New Hope, I cannot watch this movie without feeling like I'm a 7-year-old sitting in the theater again. I get that every single time. The other movies don't do that every single time. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But Star Wars, I don't care what it is, where I'm watching it, who I'm with, if I'm watching it on my cell phone, I get that same feeling of, oh my gosh, when I was 7 years old watching this movie. And of course, y'all, if you two were 7 years old and going and seeing Star Wars like I did, then y'all's point of view probably would be different. It might be, it might not. But for a 7-year-old going into a theater and watching this movie for the first time, and all of a sudden you get that, bam, the letters come into your face, and you're like, what is this? And then you got this crawl, and I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to read? You know, as a 7-year-old, I'm like, no. But then once that goes, then all of a sudden you just got this big, huge Star Destroyer, and you're like, oh my God, you're hooked. And you're glued to it by then. There's nowhere to go. And yeah, as a kid, that first piece can kind of get slow, and I understand that, but still, it's just so great watching these two characters. I'm like, this is so stupid. You got two droids, you know, they're just kind of going around. You think this is so dumb, but it's just awesome. Every single thing about it is just, it always throws me back to there, to that time period. Princess Leia was awesome. Harrison Ford is just a great smart ass. And, you know, as a kid, you sit there and think about Luke as this whiny kid. But, you know, he's like, what, 20 years old at the time as a character, or maybe a little bit older. And I remember thinking, man, he's still kind of whiny for a 21, 22-year-old or whatever. But how am I supposed to know? I was only 7. And go figure, but he was sheltered a great deal with his aunt and uncle. So when all this stuff starts happening, it's kind of like with Anakin in episode 2, he doesn't know how to respond. I'm like, oh my God, his whole life is changing around him. I mean, just completely. His past is now gone, and he's walked into another area of his life, and he has no choice but to move forward. How do you react to all that? And well, to me, when we were doing our space battles, we were doing our favorite battles a few episodes back, and I had to. This trench run is so awesome to have it on that list. It's just like, it's short, it's sweet, but you're talking about a band of just rebels, like 20 ships. That's all they had. Take down a Death Star. And in reality, you think that's impossible, but for whatever reason, it worked. And with the Force, it worked. I mean, I can't say enough about Star Wars. It just, start to finish, just every single thing about that movie is so cool. The trash compactor, I mean, it's just such an exhilarating scene. You're just like, oh my God, how are they going to get out of this? And then all of a sudden, man, you know, leave it up to the droids to take care of it. You know, leave it up to R2 while 3PO is just standing there, you know, panicking in the background. Oh my God, oh my God. And it's just, to me, you had two characters, 3PO and R2-D2 together. It's two characters, but then essentially they're one in Star Wars, because they're together, and it's just like they work so well together. They're like one main character. And y'all had mentioned earlier, Jazz had mentioned it, that you have a 6-story arc. It's all one saga. And I agree to that. But for me, I don't know, maybe it's because of me growing up with it at that time. But to me, you have the original trilogy is more Luke. It's more about Luke, or it's Luke's saga. trilogy, and then you have the new one, which is Anakin's trilogy. And then, but once you put them all together, yes, the whole arc basically is Anakin and him going to the dark side. But to me, it's so much Anakin in the first one, and so much Luke figuring out who he is and who Vader is, and now he has to redeem Vader at the end. So that's just for me how I've always looked at it. So I'll kick it over to Jason or Carl for any comments, or, you know, move on with the list.
My only comment is that, you know, I mean, you make a good point, Chris, about, you know, being 7 years old in the theater. I mean, Jason and I both, even though, Jason, like, you were introduced to Star Wars out of nowhere, and I kind of was as well, there's a stigma to it for, you know, any future generations of Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars has a cult following. Star Wars is something that we're all familiar with to some degree. So for you to be able to go into it with no pre-knowledge of it, no preconception of what the heck you were about to see, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine what that would have been like. So, you know, for us, we see Star Wars Episode 4 as this bigger arc that we've been introduced to, we've been a part of, but you experienced that. So I can totally see that. And that's just an experience we could only ever hope to have, but we just never could.
And you know, one other little quick thing. Right, well, we did Celebration at the last Celebration, and I came back, and I had done some interviews there, and I decided, I was going to sit down with my mom and dad and do an interview with them. And I got to thinking about it. I was like, I had never really sat down and talked to them or asked them what I was like after seeing that movie. I mean, you know, they make comments and stuff like that, you know, because once Star Wars hit, once I saw that, it was over. That was it. I mean, I've been Star Wars ever since. As a kid, it got to a point where my mom told me I couldn't have any other toys outside of Star Wars because that's what I wanted. So if I ever asked for anything else, it was new. But sit down and ask them about it. I said, seriously, what was it like when I came home? And they were just like, well, for one thing, you would not shut up about it. You just, I mean, nonstop. You just rattle, rattle, rattle until we went to go see it because, I mean, it's like I came home, I called my cousins, oh my God, you got to go see this movie. I'm just driving them nuts, driving my sister nuts, and literally until they went to go see it. And then, of course, afterwards, I still drove everybody nuts because that's all I ever talked about. But it was interesting to see me so captivated by it, and then when they went to see it, to actually see how good of a movie it was and the story that was behind it, which, of course, I couldn't see yet. I was 7 years old. I couldn't see all of the mythological stuff that's in it. It was just a whole heck of a lot of fun. And the mythology is why it resonates with everybody. You know, that's the connecting point of it. Plus, let's face it. It's basically, it's lightning in a bottle. He captured it. Bam. There it is. So, okay. I've talked enough now for this. Move on.
I'll add one little comment to that is, you know, while it is at the bottom of my list, this movie, my mom still says that watching me sitting there in the movie theater, seeing this movie, she could just tell something in my head was just changing. I was just like, there was something big going on, and it was just, I was hooked. So, you know, it's
great.
Yes. She was a fan from back, you know, the original time it came out. So she saw it 11 times in the span of a year at one theater. So I guess I come by it somewhat naturally, but I hadn't heard, she hadn't talked about it before we actually went to go see it. So she was excited to watch me just like get captivated by this whole thing. So it was, I will agree, it's a great introductory piece for this great saga called Star Wars. So it's definitely has that magic that captures you. So it doesn't let you go as we all can testify to. But my number two, and it's, I don't know. I was a little surprised that this one got all the way up to number two. But it's Revenge of the Sith. And because I love the film, I love all the films, but Revenge of the Sith, it's a much darker film than any of the other ones. And normally I'm not exactly, you know, too keen on the really dark stuff, but especially at the time when I was first watching it, I was really interested as far as like Palpatine's character and how he was, you know, orchestrating everything, and then seeing the way that he had worked Anakin into to a place where Anakin couldn't do anything except fall into his trap, or die, basically. You know, Anakin, unfortunately, had been manipulated for years and years and years, and couldn't get out of Palpatine's trap. And so this film is just the culmination of Palpatine's plan, and the way that he wooed Anakin to the dark side, and then the way that he eliminated the Jedi Order single-handedly, which is, you know, it's Order 66 is such a powerful scene because it's so heart-wrenching, because you get to see the good guys just obliterated, you know, all across the galaxy, and Anakin going and just cutting through the temple, just cutting down younglings even, you know. It's a horrific series of events. And it's no wonder that Yoda just was almost physically crippled by what he was feeling through the Force. But then just the end duels between Yoda and Palpatine and Anakin and Obi-Wan are just phenomenal. And I love the fact that they're intercut together, like Chris mentioned earlier, because that just, each time you cut back and forth between it, the intensity is ramped up in each battle. Every time you come back, it's more intense here or more intense there. It's more intense in the Senate. It's more intense on Mustafar. And then finally, you know, the one on Coruscant ends, and then you just come down and everything focuses in on Anakin and Obi-Wan, and just this this tragic thing happening where two great friends are just having to fight each other, and where, you know, one of them has to die, and obviously, but neither of them do. But it's just, and then of course at the very end of the film, you know, you're left with that little ray of hope, you know, that just sort of gets you onto the next film. But it's just so dark, and it's just, like you guys said, it's the perfect way to connect the two trilogies. And without this film, I don't know if I could have looked at the OT and the PT as one huge saga the way I do now, because it does bind it all together, you know. And it's a very powerful film. It's a sad film, but it's a very powerful film with a lot of great action in it. But at the end of the day, your hero is self-destructed in a blaze of glory, or at least in a blaze, and you're left with all of the good guys, except for one or two, just dead. And it's just, you're like, how can they move on from this? How can they come back? And well, I'll talk about that when I talk about my number one. So, but that's why Revenge of the Sith is number two. And I think it's part of the reason why it made it all the way up to number two is because of the way how it's so opposite from the number one on my list. So, but I'll get more into that later. So,
yep. Well, I mean, I like what you say too, Jason, about how our hero here self destructs. I mean, I guess that's just it's what happens when your love becomes disordered, essentially. I mean, Anakin is in love with Padme, but I don't think he understands what that word means. So, I mean, it's an obsessive love. It's an attached love. And that's ultimately what, you know, screws him over. So, so here we are, down to our number one. I obviously know what you guys are both picking. Chris and I obviously share like minds, as do a lot of our listeners and a lot of Star Wars fans. So, of course, my number one is the greatest Star Wars film ever, one of the greatest films of all time, Star Wars Episode V, The Empire Strikes Back. There is nothing bad about this film at all. And I will fight you to the death if you disagree. No, I'm kidding. I would not.
The Minok.
Yeah, the Minoks. The Minoks are a little dumb.
Or I'm just kidding.
Yeah, why are there creatures living inside another creature? I don't get that either. But other than that, no, I mean, The Empire Strikes Back is just an incredible film in the sense of, even if you're not a Star Wars fan, I think you can appreciate The Empire Strikes Back as a movie. But as a Star Wars fan, I think it has so much. It certainly isn't the most action-packed of the six films, I don't think. I mean, yeah, we get a lot of action with the Battle of Hoth in the beginning, which is an awesome battle. And now, I know you both said, you know, obviously, well, actually you didn't say this, Jason, but I know for a fact you don't have much experience of snow, being that you were from the Texas area, and Chris is a Memphis boy. I mean, I, however, did. I mean, I'm from upstate New York. We had a ton of snow growing up, and I can't tell you how many times I built Echo Base and how many times I pretended my toboggan out back was a, you know, T-34 snow speeder flying away from AT-AT walkers. I mean, I loved recreating the Battle of Hoth. It was so much fun, and it was such a great battle where it's really funny too, because when you watch it in its continuity, after what happened in Episode 4, I mean, here's this small band of rebels who just defeated this huge space station, you know, thinking like, oh great, the good guys, they totally have a chance. But then it's like, wait, look at this entire Starfleet the Empire has, and they just come in and obliterate Echo Base. I mean, it's awesome. The rebels don't even stand a chance. And not to mention, I mean, let's you know, Chris at the Sarlacc Pit, they just did a great episode on their creatures. But, you know, a lot of people that participated in your show last time, Chris, you know, Wampas and Tauntauns, oh my. I mean, they're awesome. Who doesn't love a Wampa and who doesn't love a Tauntaun? I mean, especially here in the Wampa's Lair.
Exactly.
You know, but, you know, all that stuff, we you know, the asteroid chase is awesome. We see the bounty hunters, we get to meet Boba Fett, Cloud City, which is just this awesome, awesome place. But, you know, the thing that stands out the most to me now, and it's really funny, because when I was a kid, I always was up in the air between Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back. There was just something about the feel of Empire Strikes Back that I liked, even though there wasn't a tremendous amount of action throughout the middle of the film. But, as you know, as I get older now, there's so much more to pull on from The Empire Strikes Back. And I mean, I think there's a lot of moral issues in the prequel trilogies, especially Episodes 2 and 3, you know, with Anakin's fall and whatnot. But with Episode 5, I mean, here we have this character, Luke Skywalker, who is really just diving into this internal battle, which I think is so pivotal for so many people, especially people, you know, in their teens to, you know, even late 20s. I mean, people in that transitional stage of life of trying to figure out who we are and who we want to be. That's exactly what Luke is doing in Episode 5 is, you know, I mean, he's got these best friends who are in trouble, and, you know, he's got this dilemma. Do I go help them? Do I stay true to the bigger cause? What do I do? I mean, we learn about what the Force is. We really see Luke learn to trust this mystical Force. I think that says a lot about who he is as a character. And obviously not, you know, the entire end of that film. You know, to me, the fight between, like, Leia and Lando, Chewie and the Stormtroopers, I mean, I always enjoyed that as a kid. As I get older now, it's kind of just the background to one of the greatest duels ever, you know, Vader versus Luke, and it's this very emotional fight with, you know, Luke just being beaten in every sense of the word. I mean, he's physically destroyed, he's emotionally destroyed, and it's like when he's at his weakest point, Darth Vader's like, here's a ton of bricks, I'm your father, carry that. It's just, there's so much in that film. And I gotta say this too, I gotta give a shout out to the carbonite scene. I absolutely love the carbon freezing chamber. I mean, if I could have a room in my house, you know, all black and just covered but colored with orange lights with steam, I'd love it. To me, if you ever want to get me into a sauna, make it look like the carbonite chamber and I will join you. But I mean, it's such a well put together film. And I mean, there's comedy without it being like goofy comedy. There's incredible acting. The romance between Han and Leia, I remember as a kid, I mean, I was just kind of bored with it, because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't think that much about romance. But it's well acted out. It does a good job of convincing how Han wins, you know, Han, this kind of like this badass scoundrel, wins over the heart of this, you know, headstrong princess. So, I mean, we have so much emotional stuff going on. And the last scene of The Empire Strikes Back is probably one of my favorite scenes in all of Star Wars. You know, we have, you know, Luke and Leia and the droids watching Chewie and Lando take off in the Falcon, flying off into, you know, well, it's not a sunset, but it's you know, into this other universe. And I don't know, they're still clinging to this hope that things will be okay, that they're going to get their friend back. They're just so sure of it. I mean, this entire film is about our heroes being beaten down, which is, you know, so countercultural. I mean, most movies, the good guy wins, obviously. But in this film, the good guy is utterly destroyed. And I think that's life, though. That's life. Life is not always a victory. But at the end, what makes it a victory for them is their hope, you know. Just staring off through that medical bay on the frigate there is just... it captures the feel of Empire Strikes Back so well. There's just so much depth to this movie. So, this will always be my favorite Star Wars film, hands down.
You're here.
So, Chris, why don't you want to back me up a little bit?
I'll just roll right on into mine.
All right.
Obviously, my number one is The Empire Strikes Back, and that's never changed, and it never will. It's just, when you talk about Star Wars, this movie is just, to me, is perfect. And for a lot of the reasons you said, and the main thing for me, even as a 10-year-old, is that you go and sit down and start watching this movie, and you're just like, oh my gosh, we start out in just a blizzard and a snowstorm. You're just like, oh man, you go to all these different worlds, the characters. It's just another deep, it's a deep story. It's nothing like the first movie. It's just a continuation. Picks up 3 years later. Of course, as a kid, you don't know that there's 3 years in between. But it picks up 3 years later, and it's just a totally different story. Same characters, totally different story. I love the idea that they split up the droids. I love that 3PO goes off with Leia and Han and them. And so you get to see really the same characters you saw in the first one, but you get to see a little more evolution for 3PO as a character. And you get to see how R2 is, you know, just fine by himself. He can take care of anything by himself. He doesn't need 3PO standing over his shoulder bickering at him like, you know, he's the older brother. And, I mean, it's like everything. The creatures. I mean, come on, the Tauntaun is, like you'd mentioned our episode of The Creatures, my number one character, creature character is the Tauntaun. I mean, how can you go wrong with this awesome furry-looking creature? It's, I mean, just everywhere it goes in this film. And I do remember as a kid, the Yoda scenes on Dagobah was really cool because of Yoda. But then a lot of the stuff that they were talking about was just over my head. I guess as a 10-year-old, just really, I wasn't into it necessarily, that aspect of it, because it was kind of slow and I wanted to get back to the action. But as the years, it didn't take very long after the years watching all this, and you get to get more into the story, those end up being my favorite scenes, because it's like, oh my gosh, Yoda is the master. It was like, Luke, sit down, shut up, listen, and then do what he says. He's telling you everything that's right. I mean, you see it so clearly when he's trying to show him that he can lift that X-Wing out, and he's just not, he's not seeing it. He's not seeing that he can do it, and Yoda's like, all right, fine. And he does it without even breaking a sweat, just done, set it out. And I just love that line where it's, I can't believe that. I can't believe you did that. And he's just like, that's why you fail. Next class, you know, into class. You know, I'm sure Carl probably uses a lot of these things in his classroom nowadays with quoting Yoda or something, or just using some of the major points in these movies. And
oh, absolutely.
Oh. Yeah. And, you know, this movie does end on a downer. This whole movie is just like, it starts out in hell. It just keeps on going. They're trying to get out, and it's just everywhere they go, the Empire's there. The Empire's just like, you know, it's like this little bitty bird flying and this huge bird trying to get in, just snapping at him, and he's just barely out of reach, just barely out of reach. And it's just the way this whole movie is. It's just like the Empire's just on them, pounding them, and they're just like, you know, just killing themselves trying to get out of the way. And it's not working, but it just makes it such an awesome movie that everywhere they turn, it doesn't. It's just like everything goes to hell in this movie. It's just, you're like, oh my gosh. And then when you get to Luke, that Luke and Vader, I don't necessarily want to call it a fight, because Luke kind of comes in there kind of cocky. Yeah. He says, I'm ready for you. And then he quickly, very quickly realizes, oops, I totally screwed up. I am not ready for this. And as a kid, seeing you get to that one point where Vader starts throwing things with the Force at him, and as a kid, you're just like, oh my God, where does this come from? We've never seen that. You know, you don't see much stuff being moved with the Force. You just, you know, it's just him throwing things at him. It's just overwhelming to me as a 10-year-old. I'm just like, oh my goodness, he's just beating him to death. I can go on for hours and hours and hours, so somebody stop me. I'm going to kick it over to Jason.
Jason, why don't you tell us what your... Yeah, I mean, we obviously... We can probably figure it out, but what's your number one, Jason?
My number one, and this will redeem the fact that, you know, A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back were 6 and 5, respectively, on my list, is Return of the Jedi is number one for me. And it's part of the reason why Revenge of the Sith made it up to number two is because this is the other side of the coin. Because Revenge of the Sith sets up all of the crap that goes on, and, you know, the fact that the rebellion has to form in the first place. And then, you know, this was, you know, Revenge of the Sith. The Sith have returned and they're in power. And then you get Return of the Jedi, and Luke is coming and bringing the greatness that the Jedi Order was back. And it's just I love a good ending to a story. And this is the perfect ending to the saga that you know that we have here. And it starts off, and Luke is already, you know, this is what, maybe, you know, 9 months, a year after The Empire Strikes Back. And it starts off, and we get Luke back, and he's just, you know, walks into Jabba's palace there unarmed, and, you know, chokes the Gamorrean guards without even, you know, saying a word. And he's, you know, you already can tell he's gotten a lot more powerful in the Force. If he's confident enough that he's not going to go in there without a lightsaber. And I love the whole Jabba's palace sequence, because we finally get to bring Han Solo back into it. And, you know, everybody loves that scruffy looking Nerf herder. I will grant you, though, Chris, Empire Strikes Back has some of the best lines in the film. In the Star Wars film, you know, half-witted, scruffy-looking Nerf herder is one of those. But and then we go into, you know, we tie up that loose end with Han there. Luke goes and ties up his loose ends with Yoda, and we get revealed by Obi-Wan, you know, his lineage, and that connects the prequels into the original trilogy. And then we just get this setup for the last-ditch effort to take out Palpatine and the Empire. And, you know, this is the last chance the Rebels have at this, because they're all there. You know, this is basically, they've thrown all their eggs in a basket, and if this doesn't work, they're screwed. You know, similar to, you know, like Chris said, in A New Hope. But... the end hour, the last hour of the film, is just my favorite hour of film, period, I think. In any movie, any series, this saga, it's just my favorite hour of film. And it's just terrific. It's because not only is it a lot of great action with the space battle and the land battle and the duel, but it all tells a story and it all serves a purpose. You know, I'm just going to make a reference to another movie here. You know, you get Transformers 2, which had a 45-minute end battle. But it was just at the end of it, you're just like, come on, get it over with. This is going on way too long. At least I was. Because it just kept going, and it was like, stop it. But with this hour-long fight to the finish, there's enough story and enough that matters. That it's just, it captivates you, and I can't find another hour of film that I enjoy better. And I really don't know what else to say about it, because I just, I'm just in awe of the culmination of this great saga and how it all comes together. And I guess I'll throw in one last comment. You know, I'm with you guys. The Ewoks were great. I'm not one of those Ewok haters. You know, I like the Gungans. I like the Ewoks. But, you know, it's just this film is great. And Carl, you've mentioned this before. You know, Luke finally asserts his identity at the end there by saying, "I am a Jedi like my father before me." He finally comes into that and declares that that is who he is. And because of that, and because of all the hard work he's put into it, he redeems his father, who was the hero that we lost earlier, you know, the hero that self-destructed, the hero that just destroyed his friends, basically. And it's just so great to have everything come together and the good guys win and come on top in such just a fun, great movie. So I'm going to stop talking because I feel like I'm rambling. But it's just, I can't say enough about how much I just love the film. That's it. Okay, I'm done.
That's one of the reasons why we're all doing our own podcast, is because you can just sit down, just take one topic and talk and talk and talk. You know, it's just like, I was talking to somebody at work the other day about it. I mean, how we can sit down, like, I'm sitting there on our Top Creatures episode. We're sitting there spending 15, 20 minutes talking about a Tauntaun. It doesn't even have close to that amount of screen time. Yeah, sitting here talking that much about a Tauntaun and how much we love it. So, you know, that's what we do. We can go on for hours and hours. Just, you know, one comment leads to another. So eventually you just have to, like, okay, shut up, walk away, leave me alone, go away, or we'll be at this all night long.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so again, you know, I mean, these films are so special to all of us. And it's hard to kind of break them down. And I remember when I came up with this idea, I was like, oh, we'll do something quick and easy. And now it's, you know, 2 hours into it. But, and yeah. I was thinking, you know, oh, this will be so easy to break down. But after just like rewatching the films a little bit again, it's just like, they're all so good for so many different reasons. And I think, you know, again, going back to what we said at the beginning of the show about it being a whole saga. While that's true, this is a saga. It's a full story. Each film has its own flavor, I think. I think they all just, mm-hmm. they have something different to offer you. And I think that's why it's great that they're broken up the way they are. Is, you know, if you're feeling like, oh man, I don't know what I want to do right now. Like, I don't know if I believe in myself, blah, blah, watch Empire Strikes Back. If you're like, man, will I ever succeed? Put on Return of the Jedi. Or, man, I don't know if I just made the right choice with that girl. Watch Revenge of the Sith, you know. If you want to see, you know,
good point.
You know, I want to see a really annoying, you know, that kid at school is really, or that, you know, that friend of mine is really annoying. Yeah, you want to know annoying? Watch episode one. Just kidding.
Hey.
But you know, I mean, each Star Wars film has so much to offer in a very different way, and you know, and there you go. That's how you have it. We've now broken down our favorites, and you know, if you want to still write in and tell us, you know, what your favorite is, what your least favorite is, we'd be happy to see it and interact with you. But yeah, that'll about do it for us. Anything else you want to say, Chris?
Yeah, I just want to throw out there again the Kickstarter project. Just go to Kickstarter.com and search Trivia from a Galaxy Far, Far Away and do whatever you can to help. If you can't donate any money, then at least post up on your Facebook page or Twitter page and help spread the word and tell your friends about it. So.
Yes.
Indeed. Yes. Because if you liked this discussion, you'll love the book.
Right. One follows the other. So,
exactly.
You know, whether you like Jar Jar Binks or, I don't know, any other awesome character, you will love this book. Excuse me. So,
which has no Jar Jar Binks, by the way.
But that's why we got to get book one out so we can get Jar Jar Binks in the second book.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Book one of three.
Yes.
Awesome.
So, and the
awesome.
Third book, Chris, I mean, so obviously we know, but for those who are listening, book one is obviously your OT, book two is your PT, and what's book three?
Clone Wars Animated Series.
Sweet.
That is going to be a lot of fun to do.
Yeah. So
so much there to go through. That is going to just be a great, great deal of fun and a huge challenge.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So, well, great. Chris, thanks again for being on here tonight.
Thank you for me.
We really wish you luck with the Kickstart project. You will be seeing me backing that very soon.
Yes.
And hopefully many of our listeners will get behind that as well. So, Chris, just one more time, where the Kickstart project is, and also how can people reach you in the Sarlacc pit?
Okay, to the Kickstarter.com and then search Trivia from a Galaxy Far, Far Away, or also Facebook, facebook.com/Trivia from a Galaxy Far, Far Away. And the same thing with the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, just facebook.com/Sarlacc Pit Podcast. And, of course, also through iTunes. But if you want to go to our main page, go to galacticbinder.com and click on the Sarlacc Pit link. You can listen to the episodes straight on that page or download them straight from that page if you wish, if you don't like to use iTunes, which I come to find out a lot of people don't like to use iTunes very much. So plenty of ways to find us.
Great. Well, exactly. Thanks. Chris, it's always fun having you on here. You're like a Star Wars legend, so thank you for coming on. And we wish you the best of luck with the Kickstart project, and we look forward to having you on again hopefully pretty soon when we have a little bit of a trivia showdown.
Yeah.
So, Jason and I have dominated the trivia show twice now, so Chris and his friend Scoot have challenged us to a head-to-head.
Yeah, so, no smack talk this early. We'll give it a little while. So,
yeah, you know.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be like Rocky III.
Which is my favorite, by the way.
Oh, there you go. So I hope you don't mind assuming the role of Mr. T then, because you're going to get whooped. But anyway, no, I'm kidding, Chris.
Yeah, Mr. T lost in that one, so yeah.
Right.
Exactly. So, anyway.
Good deal.
Yes.
Before we head out, though, we have another matchup here that we want to introduce.
Right. So, we can't call it a lightsaber matchup because there are no lightsabers whatsoever involved. So like Jason and I have done before, obviously we're predominantly doing lightsaber matchups, but occasionally we want to throw in something a little bit different just to, you know, make it a little bit different. And frankly, you know, doing Jedi every single week is not boring, but, you know, we don't want to run out of names. So we figured every now and then we'll just throw in a Star Wars matchup. So without further ado, the matchup for next time would be who would win in a space battle duel between Han Solo and his beloved Millennium Falcon and Dash Rendar in The Outrider from Shadows of the Empire. So who do you think would win? They're both flying Krillian YT frigates. Dash is a little bit newer and sleeker. We get to meet Dash Rendar in the Shadows of the Empire. I really wish they'd do more with his character. He's great. But who do you think would win in that space battle? Han Solo and his Millennium Falcon or Dash Rendar with The Outrider? So be sure to write us in about that. And that being said, Jason, since I normally do, I'm going to let you do it because you have a way better voice. Well, how do people get in touch with us again?
All right. Well, you can get in touch with us, obviously, at facebook.com/Wampa's Lair Podcast. Also, Twitter at Wampa's Lair. You can find all of our old episodes over at StarWarsReport.com and click on the Wampa's Lair tab up there at the top. And, of course, you know, you can download episodes off of iTunes. We'd love it if you'd leave a positive review in iTunes to steal another line from another podcast. And at the end of this show, we're going to have episode 3 of the Star Wars radio drama, Chris? Or Carl?
Yeah, that's right. Episode 3, the radio drama.
It's getting good.
Yes.
Well, good.
All right.
Great. Let's call it a night.
All righty. Well, everybody, thank you once again for listening to episode 17 of the Wampa's Lair podcast, Ranking the Films. For Chris, Carl, my name is Jason, and we will see you next time in the Wampa's Lair.
Star Wars, based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Episode 3, Black Knight, White Princess, and Pawns. We'll be right back. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there came a time of revolution when rebels united to challenge a tyrannical empire. High among the rebel councils stood the royal house of the planet Alderaan, which had long been a loyal supporter of the Old Republic before it was subverted and overthrown by the Empire. The dedication of the royal house to the return of peace and justice was total and fierce. Ordinary individuals swept along by the fervor of rebels like the Princess Leia Organa found themselves enmeshed in critical events. The center stage of galactic history was sometimes occupied by the unlikeliest of men and women, and non-humans, and even machines.
R2-D2. R2-D2, wake up. R2.
Attention, all droids and automata in the spaceship Tantive IV. This is the labor pool overseer speaking. On my command, activate!
Oh, no.
Hey, you power droids over there, get perking! Come on, I said activate!
Really? We barely have time to recharge before we're sent back to work. Life on a spaceship is nothing but suffering.
Come on, you tin can.
I tell you, R2, my protocol duties were paradise compared
Come
to this.
On.
R2? Are you listening to me, R2? R2-D2, wake up, you little slacker! What do you mean, have you missed anything? I'm straining my programming as it is, watching after myself without worrying about you as well.
All right. Fall in!
What's that supposed to mean? Cheer up. Maybe it is just another work phase for you, but it's another round of humiliating drudgery for me.
Quiet down. Assignments are as follows. Power droids proceed to designated recharging stations. Maintenance teams report to your scheduled projects. Move it!
I do so miss the fragile nuances of human conversation, the subtle social interplay at receptions and ceremonies. No, I haven't enjoyed working with you. You're nothing but a plumber. If you astro-droids had any real intelligence, you wouldn't need an interpreter counterpart, and I could return to my job in protocol.
Listen up. I'm the labor pool overseer in the ship, and none of you better forget it. Now, special work detail. One astro-droid and one counterpart interpreter.
R2, do you think he'll pick us?
Let me see now. R2-D2 and counterpart, right?
Oh, I beg your pardon, sir, but I am C-3PO, human relations droid, on temporary assignment during this voyage.
Gag it! When I want to hear from a droid, I'll say so.
Oh, sir.
You know how to behave among humans, 3CPO?
That is C-3PO, sir, and yes, I am well-versed in over 100...
You and your partner here report to Captain Antilles, understand?
Captain Antilles? Oh, I was one of his translators.
Do whatever the captain says. Get me?
Get you, most emphatically, sir. And may
Attention,
I say...
Attention all personnel and automata. The Tantive IV will revert from hyperdrive to normal space in 15 minutes. Dick Gang's Alpha and Beta report to station.
Reversion? Now? We're nowhere near our scheduled destination. Oh, well. Move out, 3CPO. You're late already.
Moving out, sir. We'll do our best. Rest assured. And the name is C-3PO, sir. That's C... Come on, R2.
Princess Leia, may I say once more that I am opposed to this plan of yours.
If you must, Antilles.
The moment we leave hyperspace and emerge in that restricted solar system, we'll be in serious trouble. Diplomatic immunity or no, we'll be subject to boarding and arrest if we're caught by the Imperial Starfleet.
Antilles, we either act now or lose any chance the Rebel Alliance has to stop the Empire. There's no time for caution.
Ah, I believe our droids are here.
Oh, be quiet. Captain Antilles, may it please you, sir, I have the honor of reporting for duty. C-3PO, human relations droid. Oh, yes, and my subordinate, R2-D2.
3PO, you were in protocol, weren't you? What are you doing with a maintenance droid for a counterpart?
There turned out to be little need for interpreters on this trip, Captain. I might put in parenthetically, sir, that
I... Fine, 3PO, but we don't have time for that right now.
Oh.
You bring your counterpart over here by the emergency airlock.
Oh, come on, Artu.
Now, I want you both to listen to this programming tape. This is voice override, actuating code Epsilon Actual.
We confirm that, Captain. We are both awaiting your instructions.
You're aware of the identity of the person standing next to me?
Certainly, sir. She is the Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan, representative of the Imperial Senate.
This is a command-control instruction. Both of you will restrict and protect all references to Leia Organa's identity and presence inboard this vessel. She is designated a command-control voice.
Yes, sir.
Will that suffice?
Your Highness, this interpreter droid is a bit eccentric, but he's dependable.
Will they resist interrogation probing?
They'll do whatever you tell them to without fail. That includes lying and self-destructing.
You there. Astro droid. R2-D2, is that your name? I want you to leave this bridge through the emergency airlock and make your way across the hull to the ship's Navi computer sensor suite. You're to position yourself there and behave exactly as though you were carrying out repairs. Keep in touch with 3PO, make reports, just as though you were actually fixing a malfunction.
3PO, attach this transceiver to your counterpart and maintain communications with him over this comlink.
Very good, Captain.
Well, Antilles, you think it'll work?
The droids will comply. At least it will give us some kind of alibi for being in a restricted solar system.
Well, let's hope the Imperial Starfleet is in an accommodating mood.
We're about to re-enter normal space. C-3PO, send R2 through the airlock and cycle the hatches.
Yes, Captain. Where did you go up to?
Princess Leia, I hope this message you intend to intercept is worth the risk.
It cost the Rebel Alliance over 100 lives to get the information we're about to try for, Captain.
R2 is outboard and crossing the hull, Your Highness.
May I ask what it is?
Have you ever heard rumors of an Imperial strategic weapons project called Death Star?
Artu is positioning himself by the Navi computer sensor.
We're told it's an enormous space battle station with enough firepower to destroy entire planets.
But that's incredible.
Wait, there's something coming through. Oh, it's a scrambled transmission. If I've got the code keyed properly, we should be hearing it now.
Coming, Skyhook. Coming, Skyhook.
Skyhook here.
We only have moments. Prepare to copy.
Ready and copying. Go ahead.
How's reception?
Perfect. Antilles, what's that?
An Imperial cruiser. They found us already.
We need only a few more moments.
Unidentified ship, this is the Devastator. Heave to at once and prepare for a security search and interrogation.
Devastator, this is the Tantive IV. We have an extra vehicular malfunction. A maintenance unit is working on it now.
I need more time.
We are a consular ship on a diplomatic mission, and we'll clear this system as soon as we have effected repairs.
The transmission's not finished, Antilles.
Your Highness.
What is it, C-3PO?
Artu says he's being probed by sensors.
We acknowledge your transmissions, Tantive IV. The Devastator will hold fire. Maintain your present course and prepare to receive Imperial investigators.
Princess Leia, we have fallen into a stinger's nest. There are three Imperial battle wagons in close orbit around the planet.
We're almost through, Antilles.
I can't hold them for much longer.
That's it. We've got it. Get us out of here.
Devastator, we are on a diplomatic mission and are not to be detained or diverted. Attention, Alternate Command Center.
Alternate Command here.
Battle stations. All defensive shields up. Accelerate to full speed and get us into hyperdrive.
C-3PO, get your counterpart back inboard.
R2-D2, you must hurry. The ship is accelerating. Get back inboard or we'll be swept off the hull.
Tantive IV, this is the Devastator. Our sensors indicate you have intercepted illegal transmissions in this solar system. Heave to, or we'll open fire.
They'll have sensor gun lock on us any moment now.
Quickly, R2, quickly, get back inside.
Engage main drive now.
The Devastator has opened fire.
He's reached the end.
Please. Hyperdrive, now. We must be stopped.
Engage hyperdrive. Now.
We've made it. We're clear.
Damage report, all sections. So it seems, Your Highness.
Antilles, we've done it. We've got the plans. And now for Tatooine.
Tatooine? But that's way out in the border region.
That's where we're going, Antilles. I'm to present my father's request for help to an old friend of his. We're taking a very important personage back with us to Alderaan.
Important? Someone from Tatooine? That's about the least important place in the galaxy.
Here he is.
Oh, the droids. Oh, I suppose we should have their memories flushed.
I'd rather do it myself when we reach port. C-3PO, R2-D2?
Yes, Captain?
Report is turned to the labor pool. Refer any inquiries to me.
Certainly, sir. Come along, R2.
First officer?
Sir.
Prepare a course for the planet Tatooine.
Tatooine, sir?
You have your orders.
Very good, sir. Navigator, lay on a course for the planet Tatooine.
Your Highness, you look as though you could use some rest, if you'll pardon my saying so.
Yes, perhaps you're right. Summon me when we're approaching Tatooine, Antilles.
Course for Tatooine set and holding, sir.
Sooner. How long to reversion?
We're commencing reversion to normal space now, Your Highness. Well, there it is. Tatooine. As barren and unfriendly a world as human beings ever settled. Begin our approach.
Captain, sensors report another ship emerging from hyperspace.
What? Sir, we're receiving a signal from another ship.
Patch it through, but maintain communication silence. And get me an identification on that ship.
Patching through, sir.
Attention, Tandemy 4. Surrender in the name of the Emperor. We have you under our guns.
Sir, it's the Devastator.
The Devastator? That's the ship that fired on us before. How could they possibly have followed us through hyperspace?
Attention all crew. Battle stations. Combat control. Deflector shields.
All crew.
Full power. Main gun batteries. Navigator, prepare to accelerate out of this system. Commo officer, inform the Devastator this is a consular ship on a diplomatic mission.
Can't we make Tatooine, Antilles?
We'd be lucky to evade capture, Your Highness. Tatooine will have to wait. Accelerate to full speed.
Accelerating, sir. Stand by.
Princess Leia, Your Highness, are you all right?
Seem to be. What happened?
Open fire. Resume acceleration. Damage control, I want a full report right away.
Primary shields near the main solar fin are gone, sir. Our secondaries are holding at 50%.
Evasive action. Princess, we're no match for a battle cruiser, but we still might escape if we can just stay out of range.
Captain, direct hit on our main solar fin. Reactor and main drive are heating towards critical.
Shut down main drive and reactor.
Antilles!
It's either that or the ship will blow herself apart, Your Highness.
Imperial warship is closing with us, Captain. She has a tractor beam fastened to the Tantive. She's taking us straight into her dorsal boarding lock.
Antilles, listen to me. They mustn't take us yet. You've got to delay them.
If we resist, the cost and lives will be high, Princess.
And if we surrender, the rebellion is lost.
First officer, issue arms to all crewmen and stand by to repel boarders.
All section leaders, issue arms to all crewmen. Report to combat
stations. Evacuate the bridge. All personnel, report to combat stations. I don't know how much time we could buy, Your Highness.
Isn't there some way to get the data tapes off the Tantive?
They've got our communications jammed, and they'd blast any escape pod leaving the ship.
One of the crew could conceal it.
The Devastator had to track us by following a signal. Someone aboard the Tantive must have smuggled in a homing device. We can't trust anyone with it.
What was that?
We've docked in their boarding lock. We must destroy the tapes now so that they'll have no evidence.
There must be a way. Antilles, the droid. The Imperials might not blast an escape pod if it were only carrying a droid.
Princess Leia, they'll blast anything that leaves or falls from this ship.
Well, it's worth a chance. I still have restricted access to that droid R2-D2. We can send the information down to Tatooine in his memory banks.
Your Highness, a droid? You can't be serious to entrust a maintenance machine with the future of the rebellion?
It's that or nothing. I know it's a slim chance, Antilles, but it's something.
Captain, Imperial stormtroopers are inboard.
They'll have heavy weapons and full combat armor. My crew won't be able to hold them back for long.
Antilles, if we began to jettison empty pods now, the escape might look less obvious.
Your Highness, my duty is to my ship.
The sacrifice will have been meaningless unless we deliver the plans. We have to try.
All right. Take the portside companionway astern.
Right.
The droid should be by the labor pool.
Okay.
You'll have to use an escape pod in the stern cluster. Here, take my blaster. I'll do what I can.
So will I. Goodbye, Antilles.
Number one escape pod cluster. Go.
Captain, stormtroopers are driving us back.
Delay them as long as you can. Withdraw, but continue resistance. Number two cluster. Go.
We're taking severe losses. Stormtroopers are advancing on your position.
Number three cluster. Go.
Commander, over here. We've got the captain.
Bring him along. Lord Vader will want to question this one himself. Old scum. You didn't even have the guts to fight, huh?
Maybe I knew resistance was useless.
Yeah. Right. Captain? We'll wait here. You can join the rest of your scum friends later.
Lord Vader is coming aboard.
Lord Vader, The Death Star plans are not in the ship's computers.
Which is their captain?
This, sir.
Well, Captain, what have you done with those plans?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Your life is in my hand, Captain, just as your throat is. Don't struggle or I'll close my fist. Now, what about those transmissions you intercepted?
We intercepted no transmissions. This is a consular ship. We're on a diplomatic...
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador? Well? The stubborn insect. A death without meaning. Commander?
Sir?
Tear this ship apart until you've found those plans. And bring me the ambassador. I want the Princess Leia Organa alive.
Search that passageway. Secure the junction. Hold all rebel prisoners for collection. The rest of you stick with me. Your orders is to go all the way astern and work your way forward again.
Droid. Droid, quickly. Which way to the labor pool? The labor pool, which way? Oh, never mind. Oh, thank goodness. R2-D2, come here. Voice override. Actuating code, Epsilon Actual. Switch to holographic recording mode. Acknowledge, R2. Begin recording now. General Kenobi, years ago you served my father in the Clone Wars. Now he begs you to help him in his struggle against the Empire. I regret that I'm unable to present my father's request to you in person, but my ship has fallen under attack, and I'm afraid that my mission to bring you to Alderaan has failed. I have placed information vital to the security of the Rebellion into the memory system of this R2 unit. My father will know how to retrieve it. You must see this droid safely to Alderaan. This is our most desperate hour. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. End recording, R2.
R2-D2, where are you?
You will deliver that message and the information that you're about to receive to Obi-Wan Kenobi on the planet beneath us.
Are you hiding,
He's located R2? In the vicinity of standardized coordinates Alpha 1733 Mu 9033 First Quadrant. Understand, R2?
R2, where have you gone?
Now, prepare to record this data tape. This command overrides all programming. Take an escape pod in the stern cluster and eject. Calculate planetary entry ballistics to land you at the coordinates I've given you. Oh, deliver this message and the information I've given you at any cost. Self-preservation and all other restrictions are removed. Do you have all that? Oh, good luck, little droid.
Is that you? R2-D2 at last. I've been looking all over for you. Isn't there someone here with you a moment ago? With all this smoke, it's rather hard for me to see. Go, never mind. Come on, we'd better hurry. The fighting seems to be coming our way. What are we to do? We'll be sent to the spice mines of Kessel, or smashed into who knows what. Hey, wait a minute. Where are you going? R2, you're not allowed in there. That's an escape pod cluster. It's restricted. We'll be deactivated for certain if we're caught. Don't call me a mindless philosopher, you overweight glob of grease. R2, come out of that escape pod before somebody sees you. Only humans are allowed in there. Secret mission? What mission? What plans? What are you talking about? I most certainly will not get in there with you. You must have gone quite out of your circuit. You'll never see me crawling in somewhere where I'm not supposed to be. Move aside, R2, big crawl! All right, so you close the hatch. What good will all this do us? R2, no! That's the firing switch! Now see what you've done, you... You defective! What makes you think you can control this thing? Running maintenance checks on them doesn't make you a qualified pilot, does it? R2, what are you doing to the control board? Standardized coordinates. But what? Why are you activating the steering thrusters? Wait a moment.
Are you sure this thing is safe?
Found the ambassador.
We have Lord Vader. Bring her over here.
Darth Vader. I should have known. Only the Dark Lord of the Sith would be so bold. When the Imperial Senate hears that you've attacked an ambassador on a diplomatic vessel, they...
You weren't on any mercy mission this time, Your Highness. Where are those plans?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Is it not so? Take her away. I'll interrogate her later myself.
Lord Vader, should we continue to hold her? If word of this gets out, it could generate sympathy for the rebels in the Imperial Senate.
She is too important to us. The Princess Leia Organa is our only link to the rebels' secret base. What I don't understand is why she came here, to this miserable dust ball of a planet. Do sensors indicate a military presence?
None, sir. On this planet or anywhere in the solar system. Lord Vader, she'll die before she'll tell you anything.
Leave that to me. Send out a distress signal from the Tantive IV. Then inform the Senate that all aboard were killed in a mishap.
Lord Vader, sensors report that the Tantive IV was jettisoning escape pods during the fighting. There were no life forms reported aboard any of them, but one of them fired at steering thrusters.
So, she must have hidden the plans in that pod. I want the pod located and the plans retrieved. See to it personally, Commander. I want them found, even if it means tearing apart, bit by bit, this miserable speck of a planet, this Tatooine.
With the capture of Princess Leia Organa, Darth Vader, Dark Lord of the Sith, advances his designs by one more step. And far below on Tatooine, a young farm boy named Luke Skywalker is about to be caught up in events that will shape the future of a galaxy. Suspended in between in their long entry fall, two singular machines hold the key to the vast conflict between Empire and Rebellion. Star Wars, Episode 3 by Brian Daley. Based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Featured in the cast were Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, David Aykroyd as Antilles, Brock Peters as Darth Vader, and Anne Sachs as Leia. The series was directed by John Madden, with sound mixing and post-production by Tom Vagley. Music by John Williams. Sound design for Lucasfilm by Ben Burt. Story editor for the series was Lindsay Smith. Casting and production coordination by Mel Saar. Executive producer was Richard Tosca. Executive producer for Lucasfilm was Carol Teitelman. Star Wars was presented by National Public Radio in association with KUSC-FM Los Angeles with the cooperation of Lucasfilm Limited.